on your right.
I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Who the fuck is that guy? Who the fuck is that?
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights.
I actually was running down. I usually record in the basement in my house, and I was running down the stairs. I ran upstairs for a second, and I saw it ringing. I'm like, oh, man. So I had to, like, hustle over here. So going up one flight of stairs makes me out of breath because I'm old and fat.
I was going to say because you're an American, but okay.
Yeah. I bet, like, in the Renaissance, all those fat people would have trouble with stairs, too.
Yeah, they probably didn't have a lot of stairs back then.
I feel like they were made of stone, and they were even more unforgiving.
Probably, but again, there's maybe one flight. They didn't have elevators and shit. And they just had servants. They're probably like a dumbwaiter or something.
How do you feel about escalators?
They're fine?
Yeah, I'm always afraid I'm going to get, like, sucked into it. Never happens.
That almost happened to me when I was a kid. But my mom saved me. Then she saw some other kid that get stuck. That was horrible, I guess. But
it's hard. Have you ever had to time it with a little kid? That is tough because you're like, okay, step, but they're like reaction time sucks, and they're always like a step behind, and then you got to drag them onto the step you're on. It's a big production. Escalators with children.
Believe it or not, I've not been around a lot of children on escalators. It just doesn't come up in my life that much.
You're fortunate. The other one that's always fun is trying to do it with a stroller, because you can't get the stroller. The steps aren't long enough to get, like, both wheels on it, so you kind of got to tilt it. It's a whole thing.
This is a show about the most violent sport in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about strollers and escalators.
We're complicated men.
That's true. We're modern men. We're polymaths. We're Da Vinci-esque, really, if you want to be honest about it.
Renaissance men.
Exactly.
Totally. There were no MMA shows this past week. And by the way, this show is called MMA and Stuff. You can find it on halfguarded.com if you happen to stumble upon that website somehow. Also on iTunes and Google Play. My name is Matt. That gentleman over there is the esteemed Michael Coughlin Esquire. As I was saying, there weren't really any MMA shows this past weekend. No UFC, no Bellator, no Ryzen Freak Show, no Bob Sapp fighting a bear. Kind of a quiet weekend, which is unusual. You don't get a lot of weekends off like that. Did you do anything special with your free time?
I had dinner with my brother and my mom on Saturday.
And I presume your mom cooked, or did you go out?
We went out to Claim Jumper. No, Rock Bottom. Rock Bottom's where we went.
Is that a chain?
Yeah, it's like a Ruby Tuesday type of little nicer than that, but that kind of level of chain.
It's not wrestling themed?
No, it's not. Although I did hit someone in the back of the head with a chair and told them to suck my dick afterwards. It was very, very controversial, but whatever, that bitch had it coming.
Was it your mom?
No, it was a server, because she looked at me the wrong way, and I could just tell. I'm not going to be played for a fool like that.
I understand. I've always wanted to open a restaurant. Tell me what you think of this theme.
Okay, actually, I can tell you right now, it won't work because it involves opening a restaurant, and that just won't work. But anyways, yeah.
It's called Restaurant, but it's wrestling-themed, and you spell it with a W. W-R-E-S-T-A-U-R-A-N-T. Restaurant. You have wrestling stuff involved in it.
I mean, I like the name, actually. It's very clever. It'll never work because, you know.
No one likes wrestling. Yeah,
actually,
I've
been thinking, like, I feel like pro wrestling is more established than ever these days.
Well, I was thinking maybe we should talk about Wrestle Kingdom, because that was a show in the last week. It was on January 4th at the Tokyo Dome in Tokyo, Japan. I know we touched on it last week. Essentially, the main event was really, I think, for all intents and purposes, Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega. The official main event of the show had Okada versus what's his name there?
Naito.
What was his name? Naito. Thank you.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. But I saw bits and pieces of the show. I saw the whole Omega Jericho match, which I thought was great. There was a little controversy before the show, and I think we touched on it. It was coming out while we were doing the show last week, where Jericho put out that Instagram picture, I guess, some fan art, where they had Jericho and then like the ghosts of Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit. Jericho essentially dedicated the match to those two guys, which upset a lot of people, because obviously Benoit doesn't have the greatest, personal history since he murdered his wife and child and then hung himself in his basement. So a lot of people took Jericho to task. I know you questioned that move as well.
That was fucking insane. It was just tone deaf. His reaction where he was defensive about it. Like, if he had done it and then, like, oh, shit, I didn't think about this. Or, and then here's the thing. I can even understand there's that kind of, like, look, I remember my friend. I know what he did. But, like, I'm dedicating this, like, to that moment in time when things were good. That's what I would remember. But he didn't say that. He just doubled up, like, no, you guys don't know the truth. I was like, he fucking murdered his wife and child with his bare fucking hands, you asshole. It's insane that he did that. It's right. Absolutely fucking insane. It's Chris Benoit. He's the biggest, I don't want to say heel, villain, evil person in wrestling history. It's everything. I mean, there's nobody. The only thing he could have done worse is see if he'd raped his kid first or ate one of them or something. It's just, it's beyond the pale. And this whole, oh, he's my friend. Weren't you friends with the woman? You know, she was your friend. And what about Daniel? He's a little fucking 6-year-old kid. I mean, I know. You don't know how you'd react in that situation. I really don't. And if it was my brother or Tony or you or somebody like that, that's the only people I know. Like, if that happened, I don't know what I would be like. But I got to imagine I wouldn't be sitting here, like, every couple of years being like, by the way, everybody, I want to let you know. In addition to our sponsor, MeUndies, I also want to make sure that we remember that time with Matt Grady. This is before he murdered his family in a fire. Before that, though, he did some good podcasts. I think we should just remember those good podcasts and not the fact that he murdered his family.
If Jericho had come out and said something to the effect that, listen, I understand that that post upset some people, but I think what Chris did was wrong, but that's not who he really was. He wasn't himself when that happened. The guy I knew and worked with and traveled with for 25 years, that's not the guy I knew. I don't know what was going on with him at the time. But the times I knew him, he was a good person. Would that make a difference? Because obviously anybody who does that isn't sane. It's not normal behavior. And it wasn't like Benoit had this history of violent behavior before that.
He probably did.
You think you would have heard something about it?
I think they
know
did
what
say
I mean?
Like he'd beat her before.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not defending Jericho. Like immediately when I saw that, I'm like, ooh, that's not good. But at the same time, it's like, if he had come out and made a better case for himself, would that have made a difference to you?
No. And the reason is because he was initiating this dialogue.
Right.
If he had been responding to a question, I'd be like, okay, you asked the guy what he thought, and he said, hey, it's tough. You know, it's my friend. And even though somebody can be completely evil, but you try to compartmentalize whatever it may be, I'm like, I get it. But when you dedicate something to somebody like that, first of all, I mean, it's obviously, it's kind of like this meaningless thing, but to the extent that it has the reason you're doing that is because you want people to think about him. You don't honor and dedicate a fucking act that has no direct, you know, correlation, you know, causation, anything to what's going to happen. Like, you know, Babe Ruth hits the home run for the kid in the hospital bed. We're not sitting there going, oh, wow, that'll cure cancer. We're like, oh, he wants us to remember this really cool little kid. And so Jericho was like going out of his way to say, like, hey, everybody, let's remember all those great fake fights that this guy did. No. Yeah, I'm not going to remember. Look, I'm sure, look, Chris Benoit had some amazing matches in history, and if you want to say you can go back and watch them, that's fine. I have no problem with that. Like Roman Polanski's a fucking maniac murderer, but I watch his movies. That's fine. I get that. But I'm not going to sit there and be like, everybody, we're going to have the Roman Polanski night here, where we just honor him. It's stupid.
Right. I get it. Immediately when I saw it, I thought it was not good. I'm like, you just got kind of a, I don't want to say icky feeling, but kind of a feeling where, ooh, that's not good.
We
just so.
Gotta go, wait, what? And then, but the thing is, after you go, why would you do that? You go, oh wait, there's no real benefit to this. And if you're gonna try to go out there and say, I want to honor somebody, fine. If he wanted to explain it, maybe I would disagree, but I'd be like, okay, he's trying. But what's the point is posting this picture saying, I'm doing it for like the fallen, like Benoit is a victim a la Eddie. Like Eddie's a victim in the industry. But I mean,
fine. But some people argue that Benoit is a victim
if they want to say
of
that,
the industry.
So be it. He fucking murdered his wife and kid. It's just,
I get it.
Right,
I
mean, but,
playing devil's advocate.
But it's like, if you say this is for the fallen, and then when people ask you, wait, what the fuck? And your response is, I don't want to talk about it, you don't understand. It's like, what the fuck is that? You, if I come out there and say, like, everybody, I want to dedicate this movie to Harvey Weinstein. And then when people ask, what do you mean? You go, I'm not going to tell you what I mean about that. But, well, that's kind of a fucking weird thing to do right now, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Jericho was essentially saying that he actually knew Benoit, was friends with him, and all these people, the millions of wrestling fans out there who talk shit and are posting stuff on Twitter and, you know, adding him on Instagram and all that crap, have never met Benoit, have never met Jericho, don't actually know anything about them. I mean, there's something to
I'm
that,
glad
I think.
I never met Benoit because he probably would have killed me. Because, you know, that's what he does. Jesus
yes.
Christ, people, he murdered his wife and fucking child. This is
yes.
This is like some guy where you're like, he made a mistake, where it's like, it's pretty much the worst thing anyone's ever done in the history of the world. Mm.
I haven't watched a Benoit match since.
I don't think I have.
Because it creeps me out. It's weird because it makes me uncomfortable. Like, what if I ever see like a clip of him or something, I just think about him killing his wife and
yeah,
kid
and
choking his kid out and then like hanging himself with the weights in the basement. Like, I can't get, like, obviously there's no pictures of that, but I've got the image of both things in my head. And it's like, I have no interest in thinking about that, watching him wrestle. It just does nothing for me.
And like, when I see like everything he does, and I know it's quote unquote fake, but it's like, well, apparently it really wasn't fake. And maybe he was a victim in the sense of the industry hurt him and this and that. But there just has to be a point when we have to just say, sorry, you don't get a pass. And you know, maybe one day we'll figure this out and we'll be able to, you know, cure people and like reverse chemical imbalances and we won't have to suffer with these horrible things. But until we do, like, well, that means that everybody's got something like that. That means that if you want to, like, that, anybody that says that, you can't get mad at Donald Trump because you just be like, well, maybe he's got something imbalanced. It's not his fault. He's just doing the best he can with what he's got. You know, maybe that pedophile over there, whatever it may be. It's like, yeah, but until we can fix it, sorry, I just have no choice but to look at you and be like, that's really fucked up.
Did you happen to catch any of this show at all?
Nope.
Did you watch any of it?
I saw an animated GIF of Omega hitting Jericho in the head with a knee. And I heard all these people talking about how great it was. I'm like, oh, that sounds really good. I might want to see that. Then I thought, nah, fuck it. I'm not going to watch them. I'm just not going to watch it. And I want to. And it wouldn't matter. Like, if I watch it, it's not going to change the world. But I don't know. Maybe my not watching it changes the balance of energy in the universe a little bit or whatever. I don't know how this shit goes, but fuck that.
That was the only match I saw, and I liked it. I heard the Okada-Naito match was also good. But I didn't catch that. Both matches went over half an hour. And I guess, like New Japan World got a lot. I mean, I shouldn't say a lot of new subscribers, but like 20,000 new subscribers, which is really good for, you know, a Japanese based pro wrestling company. So I think the show did what it was supposed to. Jericho appeared on a couple shows after, and there's some buzz over New Japan, which is, I think, kind of cool and a good thing. Obviously it's going to be a niche product no matter what, but, The wrestling's good. People seem to like it. And I feel like we're in a time in history now where stuff like New Japan with, you know, YouTube and New Japan World, people have more access to it. And it's also on Access TV.
That's good.
Like I think that's a good thing. If there's more wrestling out there, it's good. It's more jobs for wrestlers, and an alternative to WWE never hurts. And maybe WWE sees some of their success and takes from it, like they did back in the mid '90s with WCW and ECW.
They kind of have, and they created NXT, and that's kind of their Ring of Honor type of deal. And I think overall we're getting closer and closer, and it's. Thank you, capitalism. All thanks to the development of technology, that the barriers to entry into these markets are just so low. It used to be if you wanted to have a professional looking TV show, it'd be costing $50,000-$60,000 on cameras and all this. Just like nowadays, you got a GoPro? Yeah, that'll probably do 90% as well as anything you see on TV. And all this stuff can be done with green screens, and you can create these. Essentially, it's like a world. Where everybody has their own
podcast,
Rocky Horror Picture Show. Like everybody's got their own little weird niche thing, and because the internet is out there, we can all connect with each other. And so, if you really like Japanese pro wrestling, where the guys look like they're trying really hard, and you live in America, guess what? There's like 10,000 other people in this country that you can talk to, and the guys from Japan will fly over once a year and make a bunch of money off of you, and you'll love it. It's a fucking golden age. I always thought that it kind of began with Nirvana, because I thought that was a time when the music industry realized, oh shit, we can push everything. We don't have to just do one style of music. But it's also that, and Napster was a big one, I think, and it's just the fucking internet. It's the internet. It's awesome. I love the internet.
Yeah, to me, New Japan feels hot now. I mean, part of it's Jericho, part of it's the Omega Okada matches. Those seemed to catch a lot of fire last year, and they've got a following, and that's good, because there's kind of been a dearth of that over the last, decade in America, where it's like, yeah, you had WWE, but it's sucked, in my personal opinion. And then on top of it, it's like you had TNA, but it was bad. And then you had Ring of Honor, which was always good, but nobody really watched it and never gained any momentum really. And now there seems to be a little traction here with New Japan, which is nice, and hopefully they can keep it going. I know they've got a couple shows in, I think, Long Beach in California coming up, and then they're going to be involved in, I think, a Ring of Honor show over WrestleMania weekend in New Orleans.
They should do a show in Vegas, for sure. They have to go to Vegas. Oh, that way they can have O.J. Simpson as a guest star, and just, keeping with the streak there.
Okay. Moving along.
Maybe they go to Florida and they could get Casey Anthony. She probably needs some money.
Yeah. You think that would be the route?
George Zimmerman's
also. Are we talking about New Japan? New Japan would hire them?
Yeah, why not? They're cool with murdering your family. So why not?
Oh, because of Jericho. I get it.
Otherwise, that's really random for me to start picking.
Trying to figure it out. I'm like, I see that more being like Dream or Ryzen or something, but now I get it.
Sometimes I'm
a little slow. I'm not used to doing this on a Tuesday night. By the way, is this going out tomorrow?
It's going out
tomorrow.
It should Thursday.
Go out tomorrow.
I want to keep that streak.
But what difference does it make? I don't care.
I already got shot. You're right. What difference does it make?
Because there could be a story tomorrow and it won't be on the next day and we'll look stupid.
Yeah, we don't have that many people listening.
It's my concern. I didn't say it was anyone else's. Chris Cyborg is claiming that UFC 219 was the third most purchased pay-per-view of 2017. That was the show she headlined against Holly Holm, where she defended the featherweight title.
I saw somebody else say that on the internet, so I'm guessing that's where she got it.
I think it's accurate because the two shows that would have beat it were obviously GSP Bisping, which I think was
a million.
Was that UFC 217? Then we also had UFC 214, which was Jones Cormier. Yeah. But other than that, Meltzer was saying 350 to 400 was the numbers he was hearing. So
that's a giant fuck. Holy shit!
Yeah.
That's,
and I don't know if it's partially Khabib, if it's partially Holm.
I think it's Cyborg.
Cyborg.
I think it's 75% Cyborg, and then the rest is the combination of Cyborg and Holm. But either way, it's still, you know, a fuck ton of people paid money to see.
You think Khabib has enough, Khabib has any fans that would pay to see him fight?
I don't think that he's got people that would go out of their way to see him, but as I've talked in the past, the Matt Hughes effect, where when he's on the card, he adds this incredible depth. You go, oh shit, that dude's fighting? Oh wow, yeah I'll see that.
Yeah, I just wonder, because I feel like he's got his hardcore fans. Might only be 20,000 people or something, but he has this small, hardcore following, I feel like.
Also, don't discount the Conor McGregor effect. Anything that has to do with Conor does well, and Khabib has to do with Conor.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, good for Cyborg, I guess, if you like Cyborg. if you're not a fan, whatever.
The year of the woman.
And then it's looking like we might be getting Amanda Nunes versus Cyborg next at 145 pounds. The Megan Anderson talk has kind of quelled. And I think Nunes's head coach is saying the fight is 1,000% going to happen, which sounds like pretty good odds to me.
Oh, it's not as good odds as 1,001%. It's pretty good that, you know, whatever. It's UFC. They want to do their super fights all the time. I've saved my feelings. I think they're fucking stupid. I don't like them. This is exactly the kind of thing that nobody, I don't like for a super fight. Cyborg's going to do what she's going to do regardless, I think, of the opponent. Why burn the idea of champion versus champion? She's going to fucking murder Nunes. I mean, that's a disaster. And, I mean, Nunes has looked, she's been fine as a champion. Obviously, she's killed Ronda. But then she just kind of fucked her way around for a year and a half. You know, she hasn't, like, been, like, you know, lightened up. Again, it doesn't matter. It's women. They have one women's, I guess they have, like, probably have two women's championships that mean anything. If they want to just sacrifice one of them for a fucking freak show division that literally has never had it's literally a division with one natural featherweight. Every other person that's fought in that fucking division, this company, has been a blown up bantamweight. It's insane. But whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see it as a super fight. I just see it as they don't have anybody else for...
Megan Anderson.
Nobody knows her.
Like Amanda Nunes is doing 100,000 buys, best case scenario. Nobody
I understand. Knows her. But Megan Anderson's never, like, even fought in the company.
No, you just do her on the... They just do her on the card of the show in Australia. Then it doesn't have to draw.
I guess they could. Basically, the ATT head coach, Conan Silvera, is saying people want to see it. I think they have the best opportunity to leave their marks on history. Nunes, what is Nunes saying? Hang on here.
She's probably like, I want to do it after I get married to my girlfriend.
That's a good impersonation. I think you need to work on the accent a bit. The tone is close, though.
Ah.
Her coach said, I believe for the weight division, Amanda is going to be extremely well prepared. She's not going to have to make weight. She's probably going to be strong in that division. I do believe the compensation for the strength that comes from Cyborg definitely will be the tools that Amanda has on her side. I think it's the perfect fight. It's a perfect match. It's a champion's fight. It's something we don't see happen often.
Maybe people don't understand what Cyborg is. Like, you're going to match the strength? Are you a fucking mind? This is insane, but hey, good for them. If someone's gonna fight Cyborg, I'd rather they have that attitude. Maybe they know something I don't know. More likely, she's gonna get murdered.
Would you give Megan Anderson more of a shot than Nunes? I wouldn't.
Probably not, but honestly, actually, after what Cyborg did with Holly Holm, I think Nunes will have trouble too, because I figured for sure the one way to beat Cyborg would be, you know, wear her out, make it grinding, whatever. And said Cyborg's like, nah, I can fucking do this all day long. Let's go. So I don't know what these little girls are going to do against a grown fucking man.
You're going to get in trouble for
something. I'm not wrong. She fights like a man in there. It's not that she's a man. she's got the fucking mutated DNA of one.
Speaking of men, Volkan Oezdemir has pled not guilty to his felony charge, and his case won't affect UFC 220. He has demanded a trial by jury at an arraignment Tuesday in Broward County, Florida. His attorney told MMA Fighting, Oezdemir's next court date is scheduled for February 22nd, which is obviously a month after his fight with Daniel Cormier for the light heavyweight title at UFC 220 in Boston on January 20th. So it appears he beat the shit out of someone outside a bar, but he's going to be able to stall this court case until after the championship fight.
If they, there's an idea that we're all like the god of our own little world. I think therefore I am. The only thing you know for sure is that you exist. So maybe everything we see and perceive, we've created in our head. Therefore we are God. If I am God, what will happen is Volkan Oezdemir will defeat Daniel Cormier and wear the belt to his next court date.
Around his waist or on his shoulder?
On his shoulder.
Okay.
He just fucking struts in there. Maybe he takes it off from around his waist and throws it over his shoulders. The judge goes, name. He takes it off, goes, UFC light heavyweight champion Volkan Oezdemir.
I'm sure we'll talk about it next week, but I was thinking there's some, and nobody, I think this is my own imagination coming up with this, but the two title fights are kind of similar in a way, where it's these two sort of untested guys, knockout artists, killing people left and right against two older, more established, well-rounded champions. And it's like, you're not really sure how good these number one contenders are, except that they've looked like deadly against decent competition.
Except for I can't really remember almost anything Volkan has done, and I will never forget the look of seeing a human being's head go flying back like a fucking Pez dispenser.
I think that was more recent, but Volkan, he's knocked out a bunch of
dudes. Oh, yeah, he's got all these good wins. It's really good, but I don't know. Maybe it's just because he's Volkan Oezdemir.
And right, but I'm just saying that they're from, you know, a foreign land, not American. And but he's got the Manoa knockout, 42 seconds in the first round, the Misha Surkinov knockout, 28 seconds in the first round. He's got a split decision win over OSP, and that's it. So he's got those three wins.
It's probably that split decision that sucks to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's 15, but OSP's no joke, and it was his first fight in the UFC.
No, but Francis Ngannou hasn't gone more than 2 minutes in his career.
Right. I'm just saying that there's a similarity there that I don't think people have really talked about.
I think you're right. That's good.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a drastic take, but anyway, so Oezdemir can fight. So we've got that going to happen and we'll see what happens afterwards. Maybe he could be the new UFC light heavyweight champion who gets arrested and goes to jail all the time. That could be fun.
It'd be great if that's what it was. Like just the belt. It comes along, like, once you get it, like, all these local authorities are notified, like, all right, well, here's your guy. Just keep an eye out on this one. Yep, it's another non-white American. Let's go for it.
But how funny is it if Cormier keeps losing to all these fuck-ups over and over again? Like, he can beat normal, great fighters who don't get into trouble, but these guys who are getting arrested and beating people up, he can't cope with.
Oh, for sure. Oh, my gosh. If we could create a gimmick where, Cormier just always gets a belt, looks really good, and then loses somebody, and then gets the belt back because that guy kind of cheated or something, that'd be heaven. That'd be the best gimmick ever.
Like Oezdemir gets like a 6-month jail sentence, so they give the belt back to Cormier or something.
Oh, can you imagine? Like, Cormier's gimmick is that he just rats people out to the cops all the time and keeps getting his belt back that way.
Yeah, like he framed Jon Jones. Jones hasn't done any of that. He's just had like Cormier has been tainting his supplements, and like he cut the brake lines out of his car when he crashed into that pregnant woman.
Oh gosh, and it's all revealed at the end. And Cormier, he's behind it all, and there's just like this. It feels like it would be like a heel turn in the mid '80s in Georgia or something. Like that's just where it would happen. They'd be like, "Oh my gosh, Dusty Rhodes cut our brake lines," and nobody would see it coming because it's the good old nice really guy. And then he goes, "I played you all for fools. When I yelled out Thug Rose after UFC 217, I was just playing a character. I hate you all. This is for my dead son."
Jessica Penne is going to miss most of 2018 to a anti-doping violation. I bring this up because in the past we talked about how women never fail, for, you know, USADA issues in the UFC, but we've had a couple now, which is good. I like it to be mixed between both genders. The women's mixed martial arts veteran, tested positive for the presence of an anabolic steroid of exogenous origin following an out of competition test in relation to a sample taken March 20th, 2017. The thing that caught me about that is, why is it coming out now? The sample was taken March 20th? That's 9 months ago.
Unless you're doing because they keep everybody's DNA passport and all these samples for 10 years. Maybe they just came up with a new test and they're back checking things? I don't know.
Oh, here we go. I should have read more than the first two paragraphs.
Yeah, yeah. An appeal?
Penne's March 20th test initially came back as negative, but after a review of Penne's athlete biological passport, the sample was flagged for additional analysis due to an increased degree of variability in urinary biomarkers measured in the sample. Sample was then run through a carbon isotope ratio mass spectrometry analysis, which confirmed the presence of a synthetic anabolic agent per USADA. While this whole process was going on, Penne actually fought at UFC Nashville on April 22nd, where she lost by unanimous decision to Danielle Taylor. Penny's period of ineligibility began the day after that. She'll be able to return to the UFC on October 22nd, 2018.
I mean, that's so, like the fact that, I mean, I guess we've seen it before with What's-His-Face that fought for like 18 fucking months.
Yeah, the Russian guy.
Yeah, but go. Oh, that's a bad one. When you let somebody fight and you suspect that they, I mean, but I don't know if the UFC even knew. The lawyer in me is just like, oh, really? You knew somebody was a drug cheater and you still let them get in a fist fight in a cage?
Yeah, it's not good.
Ooh, that's not good. That's not good at all.
Sounds like there's some liability.
How the fuck is anyone going to cheat? When you hear like all the stuff they just did, it's like, it's probably just because I'm a moron, but I'm like, wow, they use a mass spectrometer? That sounds like something out of Ghostbusters.
Well, yeah, I mean, also just for like the whole thing's kind of crazy if you think about it. Like, first of all, it's based on people fist fighting in a cage. You're going to all this trouble to figure out what people are doing. It is kind of crazy, but
if you're a fighter and you look at this, you got to be like, they're doing all this for Jessica Penne? What the fuck?
She probably gets 10 and 10. It says, Penne was able to explain that she was taking a substance that contained the steroid under the care of a physician. USADA wrote that Penne was not able to receive a therapeutic use exemption for dehydroepiandrosterone, DHEA, the anabolic agent that caused the positive drug test, which she said was recommended to her by a doctor.
Yeah, I'm sure. Look, I know that a doctor will recommend, you know, all kinds of shit that would flag you for USADA. Regular doctors would, because, you know, regular people just take steroids. We get this shit. But when a doctor, like, they're going to, on some level, a doctor's going to know what you do for a living. Especially if you're someone who's a professional fighter, where I'm guessing you show up to the doctor's office and he's like, hey, how long has your foot been broken? Or, hey, why do you have all these bruises all over your face? It's not like, you know, if I showed up, the doctor's got no reason to think that I'm doing steroids. But somebody like her, you'd be like, well, okay, what's going on? You go, oh, I'm a professional fighter. Duh. Somebody would be like, oh, should you be taking this? And shouldn't she be thinking, huh, I could lose everything I've ever had in life. Oh, wait, no, it turns out I'm just a fucking liar, and I'm cheating.
Yeah. I was really proud of my Jessica Penne joke, that she should be called Jessica Testosterone. It's like penne pasta.
No, don't explain it.
Good. No, it's good.
It's so good.
I know. I put that out late at night, like, I knew it wasn't going to go anywhere because it was too late, but I was like, better do this now or I'll forget to do it. It's really some of my finest work. John McCarthy is apparently going to be the new color commentator for Bellator.
Yeah, that's weird.
A little bit. He's claiming that he plans to still officiate boxing, but he's not going to do a lot of professional MMA. He might do some amateur stuff, but he's not retired from refereeing, I guess. But to me, there's a conflict of interest there. You can't work for a company and then ref fights for it or for its competitors, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, I can't imagine him being able to ref professional MMA again. If he said he wants to just do boxing still or amateur stuff, I'd have no problem with that. The amateur stuff, honestly, that's a little weird just because every once in a while there are really big prospects that could be there, but it's probably not going to be an issue. Still, I mean, the boxing's fine, I guess, but I really think when you're an analyst like that, I feel like as soon as you become a public analyst, and I know he did it before for the Fight Network in Canada, and he's been fine mm-hmm. since, and I really don't think he would ever do anything bad. Like, I don't think that, like, he would be a poor referee if he went back to it in the future, but I feel like the moment you become an analyst, you can never go back to being a referee. Because as an analyst, you're there to give your opinion. And let's just say he does one show with Bellator and they fire him and he goes, shit, I gotta be a referee again. But he does a show where Chael Sonnen is fighting. And as an analyst, they gotta be like, hey, what do you think about Chael? He's like, well, I know that Chael likes to just hold people down here and not really do a lot. He's just trying to stall for time. I'm very aware of these things. You know, he's got these issues, blah, blah, blah. Well, then if he referees Chael's next fight, everybody's gonna be like, well, did you stand up? Because you've already formed your opinion. You know, you said this guy gets knocked out a lot, maybe he shouldn't be fighting anymore. Did you stop the fight too early for that reason? I don't think there's, again, you cross that Rubicon, you are, you're forever, you're committing yourself to that cause. It's the same reason that Oprah probably won't run for president.
I don't think she's gonna run.
Probably don't think so either.
I can't imagine. Like, I feel like she's too smart. Like,
I think she's above it. She's too big for the presidency.
I don't know if she's too big for it, but it just seems like it's a suck job and it's a pain in the ass and it seems like a nightmare and she's worth, I mean, and you would think the same of Trump, but I think she's more sane and stable than Trump is.
She's got some weird shit out there.
She does, but I mean, in public, her behavior's way more normal than Trump. Besides that though, it's just like, who wants to do that? You know what I mean? You kind of have to have a screw loose to begin with. And she's set for life. Like, I can't imagine. I can't imagine she'd want to do it unless she thinks Trump is as bad as a lot of people say he is. And she's got to save the country. Maybe she thinks that, but I think she's smarter than that.
Outside of that, again, Oprah's in a weird position where she's unique literally in the world in that she can probably get more done not being president than she could as president. Because you can't, like, obviously Oprah's not sitting around and she doesn't seem to be passionate about taxes. Maybe she wants to raise taxes or whatever, but clearly this isn't like her life's mission or anything like that, like Grover Norquist or somebody. But if she wants to, like, you know, like their speech at the Golden Globes and, you know, just kind of give like a rah rah, hey girls, like stand up and be proud of yourself type of deal. I watched it and I went, oh yeah, she could change the world for women right then and there. Cause women will just be like, yeah, fucking Oprah said it. And men will be like, oh, fucking Oprah said it. All right. But it only works cause she picks her spots.
Right.
And she's, you know, she's too smart. And God damn it, man. I mean, I don't know if I would vote for her, but we could do worse. I mean, she's the kind of success that does not happen in any other country in the world.
Well, she's the antithesis of Trump in so many ways, you know, this black woman from the South, grew up poor, had nothing, and self-made. Like, Trump can't claim he's self-made. He came from money. His father was a multimillionaire, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, no,
and
I mean,
this rich guy from Manhattan who grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth. I mean, the contrast couldn't be any more stark, any more different as far as, you know, race, gender, background, makeup, everything. Except they're both billionaire TV stars who have no experience in government.
She has her
own
television.
That's the one similarity.
Yeah. She has her own fucking TV network, her own magazine. Right. She's one of the five people in the world identifiable by one name. In fact, you gotta say Oprah because no one can spell Winfrey. I don't even know how that works. She's probably like a closeted bisexual in some sort of weird throuple relationship, and we're all just kind of like, yeah, I don't care. It's Oprah because we love her because she's Oprah, and she works really well because Black America knows she's real. White America goes, oh no, I feel comfortable there, and she's right. Just like Black enough where like she's clearly in touch with race relations, and she's claimed to be a victim of, you know, racism that one time when she fucking threw a fit in Europe because she claimed like the purse store thought she, you know, was racist towards her, and everybody's like, you're a fucking billionaire, shut the fuck up. But nonetheless, the fact that she thinks that way, white people are like, oh, okay, so she's like a quote unquote, she's a real one still, but we still like her. Yeah, we all feel really good about this. She ain't.
Plus,
the president of the United States cannot have been somebody that my dad was a 5-minute guest on their fucking TV show in the 80s. That just doesn't work.
Well, we said you can't take a stone cold stunner and be president either.
Yeah, but my dad at least didn't know Trump.
He didn't know Oprah.
No, but he's on her show for 5 minutes.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
Your dad just as easily could have gone to WrestleMania 4.
No, but like my dad was like on the show on TV identified as Terry Coughlin, because that was back in the early 80s when, I don't know if she'd gone national yet, but she was still here in Chicago and she's a big deal, and they needed a lawyer to give something, and he stood up in the crowd, like they had it all planned, and I guess I was like, oh, daddy's on the TV, and I didn't really understand how it worked, but everybody was very proud of my father. He probably drank himself to sleep that night.
I mean, if your two options are Oprah and Trump, I would vote for Oprah, but at the same time, I feel like there's probably hundreds of people more qualified and better prepared for that job. Like, I don't, it's a different kind of microscope and a different kind of, I don't want to say hatred, but there's a different kind of divisiveness when you get into politics than just like hosting a talk show. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, and Oprah.
Does she want to hear that shit from, I mean, granted she'll be isolated from it, but all these trolls and, you know, people will be picketing her and all these Trump Frog Twitter people, Pepe the Frog freaks will be out marching against her, and does she want to deal with that at this point in her life? I can't fucking imagine that she would.
Yeah, and like Trump has always had the public reputation of being somewhat of like an outcast. Like, it's been Trump. Like, people have all been like, have shat on him. He's been used to it. Everybody loves Oprah. Like, she doesn't know how, like, Trump knows how to navigate the waters where he's not popular and still get his way.
Right.
Oprah's based 100% on, we all like you. And she starts saying, well, I really think we should have late-term abortions and a 70% tax rate. Everybody's going to be like, whoa, what the fuck, Oprah? This isn't cool. What the fuck? I don't like you anymore. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, she does look a little blacker than I remember her. Yeah, she isn't married, huh? Yeah, she is a little uppity. I'm not voting for her. That's race, you know. I'm just, you know, Trump, like, it's better taxes. Yeah.
back to old, I should say Big John McCarthy.
McCarthy's a better nickname.
It is better. So, I mean, Coker brought him in and he's already done a session with Mike Goldberg. So, I mean, I don't see him being a better substitute for Jimmy Smith.
No.
At the same time, like, if I was McCarthy, I would take that job in a heartbeat. Like, you see the pay that these refs get per night? It's like a couple grand a night. He's going to make so much more money and have it so much easier just commentating for Bellator a few times a year. Holy shit.
Yeah, and we'll have to see how he does as a commentator. I think he'll probably be okay, and it will be unique because in maybe MMA history, I don't know if anybody's got more credibility than Big John. Like,
right.
You know, he's been there since UFC 2, and everyone knows he doesn't fuck around. And it's part of the job. He's a referee. He's literally the authority figure that we've all seen for 20 years. So when he says shit, we're all going to be like, oh, yeah, no, that's totally right. Like, that was a really good armbar setup. That's how you should do it. You would know. You've seen everybody's armbar in the world. But I don't know if he actually will be as good. Like, I know that Frank Mir talked about, and I think he's a god. I love Frank, but we'll see. Maybe he'll be really great, and we'll all be happy, except for the fighters. We'll have more Steve Mazgatti rifing their fight.
That is true. I think it'll be fun to see how Ronaldo and Goldberg both interact with him, because they've been working with Jimmy Smith and they've been working with, you know, Joe Rogan and all these great color commentators. So it'll be interesting to see if, I don't want to say Kerry McCarthy, but how that dynamic works with both of them. If one of them has a better sort of chemistry with them and it flows a little better. I'm interested to see that. I'll be curious to hear essentially what's a rookie color commentator on a national broadcast sounds like.
Yeah, Mauro Ranallo is probably the best guy for somebody in that position, because like I actually think Mauro's got a lot of flaws. He's fine in pro wrestling. I don't think he works all that well in MMA. He's just a little too fake with it. But I would say that if you're going to have somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, like, you know, presume Big John doesn't, that Mauro Ranallo's style, where he can just go on and on and on and, you know, never stop talking, works better than somebody like Mike Goldberg, where Goldberg's very good at throwing to people, but if he had to carry the broadcast all by himself, it wouldn't be good. We'd have problems with that.
Have you seen the story about Charles Manson's grandson trying to get his estate?
I did see something about that today, yeah.
But the interesting part of the story, the reason I bring it up, is he's an ex-Strike Force fighter.
Yeah, he's some, you know, I like to learn to talk. He's a mixed martial artist.
Yeah, apparently his name is Jason Freeman. He fought as a heavyweight. He's 41 now. But he operated under the handle Charles Manson III, and he hasn't fought since 2011 when he beat Jason Riley at Feijão versus Henderson in Columbus, Ohio.
That's an amazing, amazing name. Charles Manson III. The third is what makes it work for me, man.
But do you remember him?
No.
Like, it doesn't even sound familiar to me.
I'm surprised
at the time that wasn't a story that Strike Force has signed Charles Manson's grandson. It's just odd that got missed back then.
Yeah, yeah. Yet another thing to hate myself for, missing that. Yeah.
Apparently, I know they're fighting over Manson's body and his belongings, because obviously they want to sell it and make a buck, but I don't feel like I need money that bad.
I do.
Would you fight with your brother over Charles Manson's body?
Yeah.
Like you would, you're that desperate that you're going to try and sell his remains to some psychos? I don't want anything to do with Charles Manson.
It'd be a principle thing of, well, I'm not just going to give it away to him. You know,
I mean, I guess I have better principles than you. That's fair.
Fuck you. But, why should I let him do it? Maybe I don't want to sell it, but I still want to have control of it. I want my rights to be protected. I'm not letting anybody take my fucking rights from me. That's my grandfather's body there.
Okay, even if it's Charles Manson. And you had no contact with him his whole life, because he was in prison for killing people and running a cult.
Actually, he wasn't in prison for killing anyone. He never killed anybody.
Whatever,
look at this way. Like, if my brother takes a body and makes $1 million, I could be like, well, fuck you on him. I want my half. That's a lot of money. You know, how much would you pay for Charles Manson's body?
Nothing. I don't want his body.
Well, you're a little short-sighted, aren't you?
I guess. I don't know. Let me hang on here. Let's see what I can find.
Honestly, I don't even know what you really do with that, because
some psycho will pay money for it.
Look, the body I would donate the brain to science, because I do think it would be valuable. On some level, the bodies, just get rid of the body. It's not legal to sell bodies anyways. As for his personal effects, I guess.
How much can he have if he's been in prison for 50 years?
Probably a lot, actually. Every court brief, all that stuff, his signature.
Oh, okay.
You know, any pen he's ever touched, you know, the clothes.
See, I picture like knickknacks and furniture and probably stuff. Probably that stuff. Too.
Yeah, it could be that also, but.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, it would be weird. I feel like I'd have a tough time. I wouldn't want somebody else to make money off of it, but I don't know if I would make money. I think it was kind of one of those sell it and give the money to the victims type of thing. that I like convince myself that it's okay for me to get like 25% still. Cause I'm a lawyer.
Cause you did the work.
Cause I'm a lawyer. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Multiple claimants have emerged, including a pen pal, an estranged grandson in Florida, and another man claiming to be Manson's long lost son. A lawyer representing the county where he died described the legal case as really weird and like a circus. Sounds like how I describe things.
I bet that's gotta be common a lot. Like if you become a lawyer and you're working in LA County, they must be like, alright, look, you practice shit out here. It ain't like anywhere else. You're gonna get the dead bodies of serial killers who are really famous. They don't get that in Nebraska. Sorry, buddy.
On Monday, Los Angeles probate judge David Cowan told all parties that they must file a legal petition to determine in which county the legal case should be heard. The judge will decide later this month if the case should be tried in L.A. County, where Manson had lived before his crimes, in Kings County, where he was imprisoned before his death, or in Kern County, where he died. Judge Cowan added that the decision over Manson's remains and his estate should be decided in a separate court hearing.
I mean, yeah, it's fine. Judge is probably looking for a way to get out of it. Be like, let that guy do it. But yeah, it's typical. It's kind of an interesting legal question. There aren't a lot of precedents set for men who are executed. Not a lot of those out there where guys actually have anything in their estate. Shocker that most people that get the death penalty don't have a lot of effects to leave behind. But this is a new one.
The pen pal.
I bet Trump shares it.
The pen pal shared a document dated to 2002 that he says entitles him to all of Manson's personal belongings after his death. Another document purporting to be a valid will was reportedly filed by Matthew Roberts, who alleges that Manson is his father. What a shit show. Yeah, like,
I don't even know what the rules are on that stuff. I have no idea what the rules are as far as it concerns making a will when you're on death row. That's a different one, but if they know where it is, it's LA.
And then lastly, we've got Jason Freeman, the MMA guy, who came forward in 2012 claiming to be Manson's grandson. Freeman wants a private family cremation for Manson. He added that the ashes would be spread in a secret location to prevent the site from becoming a ghoulish tourist attraction.
Just fucking on his shitter. You don't have to think about this. Don't put in the fucking woods. Just flushing on the toilet right there in the county morgue. Go ahead. People want to show up to the morgue to worship him. Go for it, buddy. Go to the shitter in a morgue. Yeah.
That is a weird story. UFC 222 has a headliner now. It's Max Holloway versus Frankie Edgar for the men's featherweight championship of the world.
Well, I mean, there's like one and a half men's. But yeah, no, it's a really good main event there. Let's hopefully it happens. Don't break your eye this time, Frankie.
Yeah, so I mean, Edgar was obviously supposed to get that first shot, and then he hurt himself and Aldo stepped in. Holloway beats Aldo again, so now Edgar finally gets that title shot, which he deserves. I don't have an issue with it. I don't think that fight draws, flies. But
it'll
that's
do okay.
It's a good fight.
I mean,
you think?
Holloway, look, every time a guy like Holloway, who is an exciting fighter, who's got a unique look, and who's not like a boring dullard, every time that guy goes out there and wins in an impressive fashion, he only increases his ability to draw going forward.
Yeah.
Like, nobody loses appeal when there's a guy like Holloway doing what he's doing. And Frankie's got somewhat of a name. And again, you have to change the way that you perceive what drawing is. When you're in an era where nobody draws, well, suddenly your error bars are different. You're not thinking, can he get to 700,000 or 800,000? Is it 250 or 350? And this might be closer to like a 300,000 buy type of deal. Cause, you know, the alternative is they're not going to do as bad as Amanda Nunes versus the random Russian chick.
I don't really like Edgar's chances in this fight, do you?
I never count Frankie Edgar out because he's Frankie Edgar and he's amazing.
Right.
But
sure.
Max Holloway looks so good. It's a hell of a matchup because both guys are of that mold where I'm like, I can't picture them losing. But if Holloway might win, and then, I mean, Holloway wins this shit, then I'm ready to see him taking on like super fights. Cause I don't know what else is there. I don't, nobody else for him to fight. He's fucking awesome.
So somebody always appears, you know, but, I know MMA math doesn't always work, but look at how they both did against Aldo. To me, I know that doesn't always add up, but Holloway wrecked Aldo twice, and Edgar could barely touch him.
Yeah, it'll really come down to how well Holloway's wrestling is going to hold up. That's yeah. it. If they're on the feet, Holloway will win. If Frankie can impose his wrestling, then he will win, and we will see if, you know, again, Frankie did better with Aldo because Aldo's got great wrestling defense, and we don't really know if that's the case with Holloway.
Also on that card, we've got CB Dalloway versus Hector Lombard.
How is CB Dalloway still fighting?
I don't know. I thought he was all messed up from the elevator breaking.
Well, you know.
Remember that?
I was at that show.
Like, that story just vanished. Like, he was going to sue the hotel and stuff. I don't know whatever happened with that.
Yeah.
Hopefully he did, and I hope he got paid. Andre Arlovsky versus Stefan Struve.
Oh, my gosh, that's amazing.
And Mackenzie Dern versus Ashley Yoder. Our fights announced so far. You know what show looks like the shits? UFC 221. That show has a very weak fucking lineup. That's the problem with some of these loaded shows. Like, UFC 220 is awesome with the double main event, two title fights, but at the same time, it's like, move that one back or something, because UFC 221, the headliner is Robert Whittaker versus Luke Rockhold, and the co-main event is Mark Hunt versus Curtis Blaydes.
Yeah, no, this is the way that UFC does business these days. We've talked about it before. I don't really understand why you do a triple main event in Madison Square Garden, and then you're surprised when, you know, Amanda Nunes headlines another show.
Yeah, I mean, that show's gonna die a death in Perth, Australia. Holy shit.
You know,
that does.
Maybe they're looking at it as, we will make our money, but we're really hoping this is like, you know, builds the market in Australia.
Maybe, but how much bigger can it get down there? I mean, they had those initial shows that drew really well. And granted, Whittaker is, I think, from New Zealand anyway,
but
I guess.
Look, if Whittaker catches on, though, we'll say in Australia, Zealand, New Australia, sure. Then you know you've got a market of 20 million people. And let's face it, foreigners fucking love when they succeed at American things. It's like their favorite thing. So, yeah. Bring it on, Aussie.
If he gets over down there, they could, I don't think he has the charisma or anything like McGregor, but maybe some of those Australians will fly to Vegas for his next fight. I don't know.
God, that'd be awesome. Australians in Vegas. Oh, that sounds like a magical ride.
Here's the main card for that show. You've got Whittaker Rockhold, Hunt Blaydes, Ty Tuivasa versus Cyril Asker, Jake Matthews versus Li Jingliang.
Ty Tuivasa throw the game-winning touchdown in the national championship game?
I did not watch that. Alabama won, correct?
Yeah, and their backup quarterback has a name. Who's a freshman has a name similar to that.
Okay. No, he was the guy, he won on the last Australia card with like a flying knee. He's like kind of a fat guy. He might be the guy, the Aborigine. The first
nice.
Aboriginal UFC guy, yeah. Jake Matthews versus Li Jinglang and Tyson Pedro versus Saperbek Safarov is your 5-match main card. That's like the shittiest pay-per-view main card ever.
I don't know what you're talking about. It sounds amazing. Everybody wants to see Safarov and Tai Bang Fuck Me a Long Time fight on a card. That sounds great. It's got a good main event at least.
Yeah, but again, it's not one that draws. Like, I mean, I think Rockhold destroys Whittaker. I really do, but we'll see.
I think
Rockhold's too big.
No, Whittaker's gonna win because Whittaker is a Trumpian creation. He's part of this era where you go, this doesn't make any sense, but it keeps working. You go, eh, fuck it. There must be something there.
Maybe. Can you tell me what happened 16 years ago this week?
2002, January 2002. Let's see. Wouldn't it be Pride. No, was it? No.
It's not Pride.
Not Pride. See, it'd be probably UFC 30. It's Barnett. No, I don't think it's not Barnett and Couture. I think that was in a little later, but it could be there. It would fit time. I'll go Barnett beats Randy Couture. No, not in 2002. Oh, yeah, yeah. Josh Barnett beats Randy Couture.
Wrong.
Fuck.
Jens Pulver defeats BJ Penn.
Oh, decision. Fuck a duck. Yeah, of course that was UFC 34, you dumb motherfucker. What's wrong with you? Hey!
It was UFC 35.
Hey.
35, you guys.
Fuck, shut up. Hey. Hey, Tyrone. What the fuck are you doing here? I'm paying you every fucking week, and you can't give me the right fucking answer on these, this day in history questions. I told you to fucking have a Google alert for it. Now I look like an asshole. I got the wrong fucking number of the show. No less. That's embarrassing. Now fuck you. You're going in the hole.
Anyways, yeah.
If you had to guess how many buys that show did, what would you guess?
Okay, let's see. Low range in that days was like a huge shark fight was in the 35,000 range. They just came off of the big fight with what's going to be Vitor versus Tito instead of Tito versus Matushenko. Penn, it kind of been pushed, but not super hard. So I will say 55,000.
35,000.
Fucking duck.
Can you imagine? Like, I don't even think it was on. Like, I don't think I could have gotten this show if I wanted to. Like, I was in college at the time, and I wasn't really paying attention that close. But I don't even think it was available in my area. Like, I don't think I could have seen this show if I had wanted to.
They were on cable by that point.
Were they? Yeah, what, like Best Damn Sports Show?
Because, I'm going to say on cable, they were on pay-per-view. They got cleared because UFC 33 was when they got cleared. And that was that was a show that was scheduled for the Saturday after 9/11 and the oops.
Not ideal. So we had Jens Pulver upsetting BJ Penn, obviously a big upset there. Then in the co-main, we had Rico Rodriguez defeating Jeff Monson. Some of these shows, when you go back to like 2000, these early mid-2000 shows, there's some names that are still around. This show's got nobody. It's got like dead fighters on it, like Kevin Randleman.
Wow.
You know, like it's just, there's none of these guys still fight, except sort of BJ, I guess. But Murillo Bustamante defeated Dave Menet.
Dave Menet, that was Bustamante winning the middleweight championship after he fought Chuck Liddell in his previous fight at 205, lost, but put a good showing on. Then he went in there with Dave Menet. He just fucking knocked him out in the second round. It was just awesome. And everybody, because Bustamante at the time was, you know, a world-class jiu-jitsu guy. But this is an era where it was a little more specialized, and then all of a sudden you got this jits guy coming out there throwing hands, and people are like, wait, what the fuck? That's not fair. You're not allowed to box. And then his next fight, he fought Matt Lindland. He just out-wrestled him. And that's why, in the back of my mind, Murillo Bustamante may be the most underrated fighter in MMA history.
Chuck Liddell also fought on the undercard. He defeated Amar Sulalev.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Amar Sulalev then had some crazy shit in Russia. Like,
what do you mean?
Oh, you should like look up his Wikipedia or whatever. But
I got it right here.
He's got like some weird fucking like. I think he like had cancer and died, or he was involved in the mafia. Some like really like murder charges against him or something. It was fucking crazy, Russians, man.
I got you. He was charged as being a part of two assassinations and a third attempt in which a driver was killed. However, he has never been convicted of such things, and there were serious problems with the state's case against him. One killer testified that Sulalev had been the getaway driver, but he did not match eyewitness descriptions of the driver. Even more, his neighbor testified to meeting him on the morning of the attempt at his house at 9:05. The attempt occurred at about 9 a.m., hundreds of kilometers away.
Was he in jail or something, though, for a while?
At the time of his death,
yep,
his trial had
cancer.
Been suspended, and he'd been released on bail following his stage 4 stomach cancer diagnosis.
Fuck, I know shit, motherfuckers. Suck a duck.
He also was the 2000 M1 Global World Championship Tournament winner.
Yeah, he's a good fighter.
Last fought in 08. He lost to Chael Sonnen. He fought Chael Sonnen and Bodog and lost.
That's right. I've missed Bodog. If anybody, if anybody's listening, anybody, including my co-host, go back and watch that Bodog pay-per-view. Holy fuck, dude. It's a fucking pay-per-view that has Vladimir fucking Putin on it. And Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I like the ones where they would fight on the beach in Costa Rica.
That was, oh, I loved those shows. I loved Bodog. They had a fucking fight promotion. There was a blatant money scam as an online, like, offshore gambling company just looked to wash their money. But it was great. Kai Velasquez fought on that. And Bodog, his first fight for...
Yeah, that's right.
Somebody else had some fights in Bodog, like, really good, but they, like, lost. Yeah, it was a hell of a promotion. I like beach fights.
It's funny. I feel like every so often new MMA companies are going to crop up and try and compete and just lose so much money. Like, I don't know how you sign big name fighters and compete with UFC. I don't think you can do it unless you've got money to burn.
You just have to catch lightning in a bottle.
I know, but who? You got to get some sort of TV deal, presumably.
It's just right time, right place, you know.
I know, but you look at, like, World Series of Fighting or Bellator. Bellator's got names. They've got money behind it. And what do you think their market share is? 2-3%? You know what I mean? It's like they can't even run a pay-per-view and make money. It's crazy.
No, they're pretty it's pretty pathetic. But, again, you know.
I'm saying what could you do to compete with them? Like, spend more money, get bigger names?
Somebody from Japan.
Yeah, I just think that UFC brand is... It's the same issue with WWE. It's hard to compete with it unless you want to spend millions of dollars and sign these big fighters, and then you don't even know if they're really going to draw. If they lose a couple fights, you're shit out of luck because they lose their drawing power.
Yeah, that's probably true. I think especially when you look at... Well, companies are just kind of starting or beginning to get hot, but the UFC has just so cemented itself. I think the only thing that really takes them down will be... I actually think it'll be government regulation. If they if they want to try to impose the Ali Act onto MMA, I could see that just having enough of an effect that it could screw with things. Or, I mean, I guess Conor could do something, but that probably won't happen.
Don't think so. Anyway, that was our MMA History Today lesson. This coming weekend, we've got on January 14th in St. Louis at the Scott Trade Center.
A good show.
A decent fight night on, what is that called?
Big Fox.
FS1.
This is,
Big Fox.
I thought this was Big Fox.
I don't think so.
Maybe it's not. They usually have one in January. That's why I thought, but maybe it's not. It's on a Sunday also.
No, it's Fox Sports 1.
Oh, they're going to time it with the playoffs.
Yeah, January 14th.
This is the Conor McGregor coming out party time slot.
So we've got... Oh, was that the Seaver fight?
Yeah, remember that it was in... It was.
I was there.
Yeah, it was the weekend of the championship game. Oh, no, maybe this is early.
Dude, I remember that vividly because I think I even said to you, I'm like, he's going to be huge. Like, I knew it then because I was in Boston, right? Which is obviously, as we both know, a lot of Irish people in the area. But at the same time, it was like going heads up with the Patriots AFC championship game. And the place was fucking packed. It was sold out. Like, there were some open seats up top, like in the balcony, but there always are for everything, no matter what. And I was like, holy shit. Cause this is Patriots country and people are obsessed with that shit. And to think all these people were going to skip the game and go watch this Conor McGregor versus Dennis Seaver fight, like, it blew my mind.
I wonder how many of those people were like, I don't know the layout of Boston itself and where it is in, like, relation to the, TD Ameritech Garden, the Boston Gardens, what we really call it though. If you're true, Boston, like I am, Bostonites. But I wonder, like, how many guys...
Bostonian,
there we go. Bostonite, yes. Sounds like luggage.
Samsonite.
I wonder how many people were just, like, who didn't get to go to the game, were just, like, in downtown Boston drinking and being like, Hey, let's go watch this cage fight. And they all just like, let's go watch Connor. It's like, if you can't go to the football game, go to the bars, drink, and then go watch an Irishman beat up a German.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the tickets were sold beforehand. I don't see it doing much walk-up business.
But people would plan their day around that way.
Okay, maybe. Either way, like, I knew then, and I remember, I think I even messaged you from the arena. I'm like, he's going to be the biggest thing ever. And I was right, per usual. In the main event of this FS1 card, we've got Jeremy Stephens versus Do Ho Choi. Choi is returning after quite a layoff. He last fought that awesome Cub Swanson fight where he lost by unanimous decision. That was back on December 10th of 2016, so it's been 13 months for the Korean Superboy. And I
think, know what a packy is?
A liquor store.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm just checking. That's a total Boston thing.
It is. Unless you're talking about it in Britain, where it's a racial slur you talk about.
I would never. Never go there.
We were talking about your girlfriend running around riding the motorcycle naked.
Oh. I have some bad news for everybody.
What's that?
She and I aren't going to work out.
Oh, I'm sorry. She also left you?
She's just not available. She's always off doing something. I can never get a hold of her on the phone. It's ridiculous.
I understand.
And I think she's going to be gay now.
Did you have any more interaction from that first date, or did that just kind of go away?
No, I just finger banged her on a tricycle, and that was it.
I don't know what that means.
Isn't she in a moped or something?
No, I'm talking about
your first date
where the husband texted you.
I was just trying to figure out, I'm like, I don't know, I'm not exactly sure which chick you're talking about here. Not even in that manner, although.
Has he contacted you again or no?
No, I have not heard anything from him.
Oh, good. All right, that's good. Anyway, Jeremy Stephens defeated Gilbert Melendez in his last fight. So Stephens off a win, Choi off a loss. I saw something that Choi might have to do that South Korean army thing soon, where he's going to be gone for a couple of years. I don't know if that was horse shit, but I did read that somewhere. So this might be Choi's last fight for quite a while, if he's going to do the Korean zombie thing where he goes and, like, they've got, like, forced military service, for a couple of years.
Some sort of mandatory, whether it's military or whatever, some sort of service there, yeah. Yeah. Kind of like how the Mormons all take 2 years off and go do some, or maybe a year. Like, Steve Young did that. After college, he went off and did some missionary shit in Africa or wherever he does, and then he came back to make millions of dollars and probably cheated on his wife, but for a while there he did it.
How do you feel about Stevens versus Korean Superboy here?
It'll be an amazing fight so long as Jeremy Stevens doesn't say, I want to get a win. Like, I feel like Stevens is kind of sliding into that, I'm the smart guy, and I know that a win really helps me, so I'll just do a lot of leg kicks, and I'm not going to engage really big, but I'm still a badass, but not really mentality. Whereas Do Ho Choi is, something about Koreans. Like, they're ballers. They're little badass warriors, aren't they?
Some of them. Some of them like to take bribes, too. Steven's been in the UFC for 11 years.
Holy shit. I remember he was just like this white trash guy from Iowa.
He's only 31. He's one of those guys who's only 31, but he's an old 31, you know?
11 years, he's only 31.
Yeah. 26 and 14.
That's some good
overall.
Job security.
Well, if your job's getting punched in the face for a living.
40 fights.
Yeah.
No, maybe 30. 40. 40. No, 40. I can do math. That's right.
He's 26 and 14. He's only lost one by knockout, so maybe he's not that badly damaged. But
although, let's be honest here, it's Jeremy Stephens. We're probably not losing a road scholar either way.
He's only 3-5 in his last eight. He's on a bit of a skid, so he could use a win here. Did you give me a winner? Who are you picking?
I'm gonna go with Korean Superboy Do Ho Choi. That dude hits like a Mack truck.
Then he's going to ship out to South Korea and Hope he doesn't get nuked.
That's true. We might be witnessing the last fight of a man that dies in a nuclear holocaust. Take that, Brian Stan. You pussy.
In the semi-main event, we've got Uriah Hall versus Vitor Belfort.
Yeah, this could be the worst fight of all time. We got two dudes who are very willing
this
to be.
This is gonna be worse than Caleb Starnes.
It could be more infuriating. At least that one had some sort of degree of like absurd entertainment. This is just two dudes who are very willing to be passive in there. It could be bad. It could be real bad. Although I think Hall should win because Vitor is melted in front of our eyes.
Do you think Belfort will come out, you know, hot and heavy?
No.
That's kind of his only hope to win.
No,
right?
Because the Me Too movement has made it very clear that men should not come out hot and heavy. So stupid.
Vitor's coming off that big win against Nate Marquardt at UFC 212.
He is?
I wouldn't say it was a big win, but he beat Nate Marquardt. Yeah.
How did he beat him?
By unanimous decision.
Is that in Brazil?
UFC 212 in Rio, yeah.
Undercard of Valdo and Holloway?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it still doesn't really ring a bell. Vitor sucks.
It was also Claudia Gadela versus Kowalkiewicz on that show. It's okay. Don't worry about it. What else? Oh, we got Paige VanZant back versus Jess Rose Clark.
Yeah, this is a winnable fight for Jessie Jess. Paige isn't that good. I know I rip on her a lot, but I saw some like her Twitter and shit, and it's weird.
You get so mad about her.
Well, it's just weird because she's such this Instagram, YouTube, millennial bullshit star. She's like Logan Paul, but she fights. And you just see her tweeting all this stuff, and it's so transparently corporate shill. But like, it's like people don't care. Like, what happened to this young generation? Like, you're supposed to be against the man. She's like, look at my Reebok heart. Eh. And you're like, oh, look at that. And it's just like, ugh. She's such a marketing ploy. And Jessie Jess, that chick's a fighter. Like, you know, she's got tattoos on her fucking face, all right? Like, I like her, and I realize why I like her. It's because she has a really great smile. And I don't even mean like in a sexual way, just she looks like she has the prettiest smile in the world. She looks so cute when she smiles. But like, she first got famous a little bit a couple of years ago because her boyfriend, I can't think of his name right now, was an MMA, beat her up. Like, that's okay. Like her background. Whereas Paige VanZant, she had the arduous task of dancing in Reno at her parents' ballet studio.
In Paige's defense, she is 7-3 overall. Her three losses: Tisha Torres, Rose Namajunas, and Michelle Watterson. She's not bad.
No,
like,
but
I'm not saying she's.
Wins.
I'm not saying her wins are Beck Rollins, Alex Chambers, Felice Herrig, and Kaylin Curran. Not saying
like Felice Herrig's the only like win where you go, oh, okay. Otherwise, it's like you beat Beck Rollins. So did Jessie Jess. Beck Rollins sucks. She's not
I'm not saying that Paige is some world beater contender, but she's 23 and she's not that bad is what I'm saying. Like, she's competitive. She's competitive with these fighters.
She's just doing fucking hashtags, all right? Her life is a hashtag, and hashtags, I don't get it. I don't like them, even though I kind of like Twitter now. But still, she's got a book. She's a fucking autobiography. She's 23.
I agree. I'm trying to look at this objectively from her.
I'm objective, motherfucker.
Accolades in the cage. That's all I'm looking at. I'm saying if you look at her record, she's not terrible. Like, she gets this rap that she can't fight at all, and I don't think that's totally fair. And again, I'm not saying she's a top five, you know, 115-pound fight. Oh, this could be at 125 anyway. I'm not saying she's a top five flyweight. She might not even be top 10, but she was competitive at 115 with some of the better fighters in the division. She went five rounds with Rose.
It's actually is kind of, in a weird way, it is impressive that she does as well as she has. When you consider these are cage fights, and she's an Instagram girl. Like, that's... Yeah, you're right. At the end of the day, it's fighting. And she gets in the cage, and she fights, and she beats people up, and you can't fake this. There's just nothing fake about cage fighting. Somebody goes in there and does it repeatedly. Just the act of fighting is difficult, but the training camps and all that, I'll give her a little bit of credit, but I still reserve the right to make fun of her for comedic purposes.
Fair enough. And in the opener of the main card on Fox Sports 1, we've got Kamaru Usman versus Emil Weber Meek. Meek's the guy who beat the crap out of Paul Harris there. And Usman's not a really well-known name.
Top 10 but, on half-credit.com.
He's a top 10 welterweight who's made some noise. He wanted to fight with Covington. He hasn't been able to get it. But he's 11-1 overall and has gone, let's see, 6-0 in the UFC.
He's on a streak. He came out of that, the last season Ultimate Fighter that was good to watch when they had the Black Zillions versus ATT.
Yep.
And he won that thing. Like, he's got something. I think he's going to be he feels like, and this is probably because he's black, but he's got that Rashad Evans deal to him where he comes off the Ultimate Fighter, he wins it. You're not really sure, like, is this guy gonna, he's not quite there yet, but I think he's got the physical tools and drive that he's going to develop very well. And I think combined when you look at some of the way that, like, you know, Condit is just done. He's too old and Lawler and all the division's turning over. And I think Kamaru Usman, I think he's going to be that next wave of guy.
Yeah, we'll see. He's 29. Like I said, undefeated in the UFC. So important fight for him. Meek's not bad either. The one thing I remember about Meek is he's got that big beard and he carries like a Viking axe around with him sometimes. It's kind of his gimmick.
Don't we all?
I never have. He's also got a win over Jordan Meehan, which, granted, in this day and age doesn't mean a lot, but... decent fighter, should be a good fight. Two prospects, and they'll kind of tell you where each guy's going, and a win for one of them would be big here. In the prelims, we've got Darren Elkins versus Michael Johnson. I know Michael Johnson was bitching about his placement on this show, feeling he should be on the main card and not on the prelims. And, I mean, yeah, I guess he could be ahead of the Usman fight, but I don't really have a problem where this fight is placed on the card, personally.
Honestly, when I saw him say that, I think that's part of the reason I thought that this was on Big Fox, because it only had four fights on the main card. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, you complain. I want to be in front of more eyeballs, but it's on the same network, on the same show. I know that there's, like, international contracts and blah, 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 but there's no main card and prelims here. It's all on Fox Sports 1. You're literally just fighting 15 minutes before the other guy. That's all that matters. It looks like a hell of a fight, though. It's a really good fight.
I like Elkins a lot. After he had that comeback win, I'm not a fan of his tattoo on his chest, but fun fighter. And Johnson will throw down, so that should be a good fight. Also, we've got James Krause versus Alex White, Matt Frivola versus Marco Polo Reyes, and Thiago Alves versus Zach Cummings to open the show.
That'll be one of those fights that my first instinct is like, oh, those two guys. And you go, oh, wait, no, it's 2018. They're done.
And then on Fight Pass, we've got 5 prelim fights. This show has 13 fights on it for some unknown reason. On the prelims, we've got Kalindra Faria versus Jessica Ai. Hopefully if I lose, she will finally be cut.
I hope she wins and then loses another 5.
Well, I know she's pissed because she was supposed to fight Paige, and Paige is on the show and she didn't get the fight. Remember Paige pulled out because she had a pink eye?
Oh yeah.
And then she was supposed to fight Eye. Eye's on the show, and that's a weird coincidence. She pulled out of the fight with pink eye and she was supposed to fight Jessica Eye.
Well,
That was a tweet I missed somehow. I should have come up with that.
That's why you probably shouldn't lose like 37 fights in a row.
Yeah, it's just funny though. Like, why was that fight okay 3 months ago and now it's not? Like,
oh,
they're on the same.
Well, the timing,
they're on the same card.
Yeah, it's just easy. Timing. We all know it's just timing. And little Jessica I should not, I got no pun that works with I right now. He's gonna get poked in the eye. I'm keeping an eye on you, kid. That's stupid. I don't know what to say.
I'll also be curious to see if she can actually make 125. She's supposed to be fighting at flyweight, which she's never done in her career, I don't think. Oh, she did. 2011. She fought at flyweight.
Oh, well, clearly if she did it 7 years ago, her body hasn't changed since then.
And she lost to, what's her name? Daly there. Aisling Daly, the Irish chick, in her one flyweight fight. So anyway, that's, Jessica I for you. Coming off four losses in a row. Fucking loser. And the one fight she won was Leslie Smith when Leslie Smith's ear exploded. Like, she didn't even really win that fight. No one else on the undercard you've ever heard of. And, we'll move along, I think. Anything else going on in MMA?
No.
No. We talked about Oprah running in 2020. Neither of us think she's gonna do it. We have a new richest man in the world. It's not you or I. It is Jeff Bezos. Huh. He became the richest man Friday morning after adding nearly $7 billion to his wealth overnight. With Amazon's share price surging Friday morning after its earnings report, Bezos' wealth shot up to more than $90 billion, according to calculations by CNBC and data from the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. That put Bezos past Bill Gates to become the richest man in the world.
Kind of impressive Bill Gates has had that crown for so long.
Yeah, a lot of people use computers, it seems like.
Yes.
Gates also added to his fortune Friday morning with the rise in Microsoft stock after its earnings, but his gain of around $550 million put his fortune at only $88.5 billion, not enough to stay ahead of Bezos. It'll be a horse race throughout the day. If Microsoft goes up more, if Amazon slips back, Bezos could fall back to number two. But last I knew, Bezos was the richest man in the world.
What's really crazy about that is there's a human being out there worth $88.5 billion, and he's jealous of someone. He's looking at another man going, fuck you, I can be better than that. Like, that's
you
really...
Think?
Oh, yeah, because those crazy rich people, that's all they have. They I mean, I can't fathom that kind of wealth. There's
right.
never been anybody like, there's never been anything in history like that. We've had, you know, people who have iron fists and run countries and these kings and queens and all these Saudi princes are so wealthy and blah, blah, blah. It's like, but this is a guy who's wealthy everywhere. The Saudi prince can't really come to America and exercise the kind of control he wants to exercise. He's got his money, but that's it. Whereas Bezos just goes everywhere. I don't even know if he uses money. Like, does money even exist in his world? What do you mean, like, buying a cup of coffee for $5? He's worth $90 billion. That's nothing. That's not even, like, it'd be like if you and I, like, reached into our pocket and we had, like, 1/10 of a penny, and then we cut that in half 500 times, and so like, okay, here you go. Like, you wouldn't even notice it. It's just crazy. Like, you would just walk into a store and steal stuff and not even realize you're stealing. You'd be like, oh yeah, I'm right. Can you break a $1 million bill? No, trust me, like, a couple of us have them. This is real. But yeah, good for him. I like Amazon. I can't complain.
Yeah, no, I buy shit on Amazon all the time. So this is breaking news.
By the way, Amazon, for anybody that gives a shit, it's such a quality service, because my mom wanted these sandals for Christmas. There was these aerosol sandals. I'm like, okay, I went to the aerosol website, I ordered them, and they didn't arrive in time. I was like, what the hell? I looked it online, like, oh, your order's been canceled, we ran out. I'm like, oh, that's okay, like, you sell these shoes for a living, that's your job. So I went to Amazon, they had them in stock, and so I bought them, and they were there the next day. I was like,
"Yeah,
this is incredible. You guys are awesome. I look forward to giving you the keys to my house so you can open up my door and leave packages inside."
You've changed your mind on that one?
Yeah, I realized I can, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know somebody would come in here right now. I'm naked. Oops.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You don't know what this delivery... Chances are the delivery person's a big man.
I'm not picky.
Okay, all right. That's what I was trying to figure out.
I'm not a homophobe like you are, apparently.
Forget it. Phobe. I don't... Yeah, totally.
I love when I break you.
I'm not broken. It's just I don't really care who people have sex with. It doesn't really affect me.
You're not genuine then.
Like the R&B singer from the 90s, Genuine?
Yeah.
I'm not genuine, you're right. Pony's a good song.
Yeah, but Genuine got in trouble. Because he was on the BET award show or whatever. Yeah. And a trans woman, which means it's a dude that cut his dick off, asked him, I don't know if it was a award show or whatever it was, asked him, would you date me? Would you date a trans woman? He's like, no. And then the trans woman person tried to kiss him, and he rejected it, backed away. And everybody's like, he's a transphobe. And I'm like, wait, hold on. He didn't want to kiss somebody. I think he's actually the victim of, he's a Me Too victim here.
Yes, probably. You shouldn't force people to do things they don't want to do. This is late breaking news. I'm kind of reading it as we talk here. If this show goes out on Thursday, could be nothing. But there's a tsunami advisory in effect for guess where?
A tsunami?
Yep.
Korea.
Puerto Rico.
It's not a tsunami then.
There's been a 7.8 magnitude earthquake in the Caribbean. And they may get hit. I'm reading this. It came out 20 minutes ago, so I don't know if it's really happening or not. But poor Puerto Rico, man. Imagine getting hit with a tsunami now. Fuck. It's a rough patch. I hope, Angela Magana is okay.
God is 100% a Republican. It's the only explanation for this shit continuing to happen. It's amazing. Good for you, God. Take those Puerto Ricans, those half brown whatevers. They're not wetbacks, they're islandbacks. I don't know. Just keep sticking it to them. They don't even have power yet. Make sure they never have power ever again.
I've got weird things in my headset here. Have you seen big story in the New England area? Any of the drama with Patriots owner Robert Kraft, Tom Brady, and Bill Belichick?
Oh, you mean how TB12 and his little personal trainer there are going to destroy the Patriots from the inside?
Did you... You know what was funny about that? We talked about that when that story came out, and it wasn't a big story. But I kind of knew that was going to be a thing. I was ahead of the trend on that one.
Look, it's the Patriots and it's Bill Belichick, and I think people are just looking for... they're looking for any crack in that armor ever. It just never falters. They're 5-2 in the fucking Super Bowl in the past couple, two decades. That's insane. People just want to find some reason to be like, okay, what breaks it up? Something's got to happen here. So now it's going to be, oh, Tom Brady's weirdo personal trainer? Yeah, that's what brought the ship down. Yeah.
Well, it's weird because... There's a weird dynamic at play. Obviously, the team's the most successful football team ever. But Brady's getting old. He's 40, but the team is still 13-3. And a lot of the drama, besides the Guerrero thing, his personal trainer being around and working with other players on the team, and supposedly Brady was encouraging teammates to go to this guy as opposed to the Patriots medical staff, who Belichick wanted him to go to. The bigger issue is Jimmy Garoppolo, who was the Patriots' backup quarterback the last several seasons, and this younger guy who looked really good and Belichick apparently wanted to keep. And the rumor is Brady wanted him out. Brady goes to Kraft, and Kraft tells Belichick to trade Garoppolo, which I don't know if there's any truth to that, but now the rumor is Belichick's going to leave the Patriots because he's pissed off at Kraft. So the whole thing, there's a lot of drama. But to me, it's they're still 13-3 and gonna most likely win the AFC and go to another frickin' Super Bowl this year. Despite having this 40-year-old quarterback and all this drama, the coach is 65. Both coordinators are probably leaving the team this season for head coaching jobs. It's just, they're still successful in spite of all this shit. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of a really interesting look at the different motivations of people who are all in the same environment, and everybody's acting in a good faith way. You know, you got the 40-year-old Tom Brady, who's his vision extends 3-5 years at the most, maybe probably 2 or 3 years. All he's thinking about is, I know I can win now, I can win next year, maybe the year after that. And so he only cares for the next 3 years, we'll say. He doesn't understand a legacy beyond that. Bill Belichick, 65 years old, he's looking, okay, I want to bring in Garoppolo, maybe have another 10 years doing this, or secure the legacy for the future. I go, oh yeah, okay, I really was a guy that had multiple generations of quarterbacks. And then you got Robert Kraft, and he's like, I'm a billionaire, bitches. Like, I really know what it means to own something and look at it in the real long run. Like, Robert Kraft has the advantage of saying, what is good for this team for 50 years? And he's probably right in that for 50 years, it might be right to get what you can a little bit out of Tom Brady right now and create that those legends that live forever. But it's just really cool to see three guys who are so clearly, like, the best at what they do because of each other. And all of a sudden, it's just forked off just a little bit, and things aren't quite what they once were. But yeah, they're going to win the whole damn thing again, because...
Well, all of them all of them are claiming that the story is bullshit. This is an ESPN story. It's fake news. They're all saying that there's nothing to it. But usually where there's smoke, usually there's fire, and I'm sure there's something going on. I mean, they've all been working together for like 18 years, and there's going to be some bumps in the road when you work with somebody for that long. It's just human nature. But it's just interesting because they traded Garoppolo to the 49ers for a second round pick, and it's like Garoppolo's gone 5-0 with the Niners, and the Niners suck. And it's just like, holy shit. Everybody's looking at Belichick now, like, why did you trade this guy for a second round pick when you could have got maybe a couple first round picks? Like, he seems like a quality NFL starter. And people are just questioning the whole thing. If Garoppolo had gone to the Niners and sucked, this wouldn't even be an issue. Because people would be like, Belichick was right again. That guy wasn't that great. He's 1-4 with the Niners and looked like shit. And we're probably lucky we got a second round pick for him. But now, because Garoppolo's done so well out in, San Francisco, it looks like a total fuck up on the Patriots' part.
Yeah, you know, you can kind of look at it, again, the three layers of, egos or whatever, where Belichick probably looks at Tom Brady and goes, look, if you're doing the rational and logical thing here, you will understand that you have 1 to maybe 2 more years at best, and then you should just, you know, leave and help bring in the next generation. That's the most logical, most likely scenario. And if you're Tom Brady, you're going, that might be the case, but I've defied all the odds so far, plus I have no reason to leave. I'm going to do this for as long as I can. And if you're Robert Kraft, you're looking at it going, I know I can win a Super Bowl with Tom Brady. I know I can win 2. Whereas Jimmy Garoppolo, that's all of a sudden going to probably have us go back 2 or 3 years, because it's going to take time for him to emerge at that Tom Brady level. And that's, you know, the best case scenario. I would rather have 1 or 2 guaranteed Super Bowls today than the chance of 1 in 5 years. So, like, everybody's, again, they're all kind of acting in the correct way for their circumstance. Just as circumstances happen to come together in a manner that, you know, sometimes things just don't work out. Sometimes your husband threatens to kill you. These things happen.
Well, it's funny. It's just a question of, do you win now and forfeit the future? Or do you keep both of them? I guess. That's essentially what they're doing, but I don't get the impression that's what Belichick wanted.
The other thing,
Belichick's a heartless motherfucker. You know what I mean? He would, if Brady, if he thought Garoppolo gave the team a better chance to win, he would bench Brady and put Garoppolo in there. He doesn't give a shit. I think most coaches would be scared shitless to pull Brady out. You know what I mean? Based on his history, and he's got one more good game in him. He'll pull this one out for us or whatever. Belichick does not think that way. He'll cut anybody at a moment's notice. He'll bring in, you know, Randy Moss from the Raiders and do all this crazy stuff that most NFL coaches don't have the balls to do, and usually it pays off for him. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
But what he couldn't do is a situation like this where obviously Brady was going to play this year and be the starter. Nobody doubted it. Garoppolo was going to be the backup. Garoppolo is done at the end of this year. And if
you could have franchised him.
Maybe, but if you're Garoppolo, you're looking at this and you're thinking, I want to be a starting quarterback. So sure. Garoppolo, again, acting in a logical and, you know, rational way, looking what's best for him, thinks, if I come back, I might just be another backup for another year. And at a certain point, like, oh, great, you franchised me. I just get one big payday as opposed to that mega, you know, payday that changes everything. And if you're Belichick, you can't get rid of Brady yet. Because obviously if you cut Tom Brady at the beginning of this year thinking, well, look, I'm going to show Garoppolo that we believe in him. I think this guy's the quarterback for the future. Maybe it works out. And then Tom Brady just goes to the Giants, and once again the Patriots lose to the Giants.
That would have been amazing. That would have been amazing. Or the question would be, if you, what can you get for Brady versus what you can get for Garoppolo? I wonder if that would ever even came up in conversation.
I don't even know if you can trade Brady.
I
don't know what,
is there no trade clause?
I don't know how, I know in baseball, if you're with the same team for 5 years and you've been in the league for 10 years, you can veto any trade. I don't know if there's some sort of similar deal in the NFL or not, but I'm guessing that Tom Brady, you know, like, if he doesn't want to go somewhere, he's just not going to go.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see how they do. Cause if they win the Super Bowl, it's going to be all good. If they lose like next week to Tennessee or something, which seems highly unlikely, shit's going to hit the fan around here. There's so many people, like if you put any of the sports radio, the Boston channels on, it's all they're talking about. It's like such drama around here right now. It's awesome.
Yeah, you guys really are like a gigantic town full of housewives gossiping about bullshit.
Kinda. Totally. I'm not a fan of this shit, but I just, it's in the news.
You're going to win the Super Bowl. It doesn't matter. It's going to be a cakewalk.
We'll see. Shit happens, man. They went 19-0 one year and lost in the Super Bowl. Who the hell knows?
Yeah, but none of these teams are good.
I guess.
Nobody's good.
I don't know how good the Giants were that year.
Good enough to beat them before.
That's not very good is the Cleveland Browns. Did you see their fans had a perfect season parade on January 6th?
Yeah, some like local DJ had started it, and he'd been raising money, and he said, if we go 0-16, we're going to throw a parade, and if we win a game, I'll give the money to charity, which is kind of a weird one. It feels like, okay, you wanted to raise money for a parade. I kind of get that. And you want to be like, hey, I'm not going to pocket this money. I'll do something good with it if we don't have a parade. But wouldn't it have been better just give the money to charity anyways and not have a parade celebrating shit? Like, there's probably some starving kids would be like, oh, I'm really glad you guys spent $100,000 to have an ironic parade for a bunch of losers. I'm going to die of kidney failure now. Thanks.
I like that a bunch of the players on the team were pissed and said it was disrespectful. Like the football team, the players were pissed that the fans did this mocking them.
Well, guys.
Win a game.
Yeah, I mean, I know that you got pride. And I guess I would kind of like that if I'm a fan, but I want my players to be pissed. I want them to have some pride, I guess. But just look at yourselves. Look what's going on. You're not a professional football team. Like, you guys are just lucky. You're all collecting a good paycheck. It's kind of like when it's like if you're working at a company and you know the company's going to close. Like, you just can see the writing on the wall. Like, 6 months from now, this thing's gone. And you know that nothing you do actually matters. So you're just like, well, I'm just going to try shit out and get my experience. Go move on. If you're probably got some sort of weird skill that Belichick will grab and win a Super Bowl with you or something like that. And then in the meantime, collect your paycheck. And Cleveland's not that bad of a place, actually. I'm kind of like digging areas like that these days. So, hang out with LeBron.
Is, LeBron going to go to LA, you think?
Yeah.
After the season?
Yeah. And I feel kind of bad for him.
For LeBron?
Yeah, in the sense that he obviously,
I mean, he could go anywhere he wants.
The thing is, he's obviously one of the, I don't know, two or three greatest players ever. He's a god right now. Even now at his advanced age where he's played more minutes than almost anyone, he still goes out there and shoulders the load and does so well. And he brought that city a championship. He just exists in the same era as the Warriors when they're rewriting the way we play basketball. He's just up against this buzzsaw. It's like, ah, shit. And if he goes up to LA, like, no matter where he goes, unless it's the Warriors, he's probably just going to get hit again. I don't even know if there's another team in the league that he could go to. Maybe from like Oklahoma City or something like that. They could, something crazy, but otherwise, he's at the end of his career. He's the greatest of all time, but just, he's got that crazy Bulls team against him. You're just like, yeah, no, sorry. Nobody's going to give you a shot. I would not give him a I don't give him a chance against the Warriors over seven games. And I think LeBron is a transcendent talent. We saw what happened last year. It was a slaughter. He won one game, and he won one game by doing things that no human being could ever do. And it still wasn't enough. He could only do it once. So, on the other hand, he's very, very rich. So he probably is not somebody I should feel sorry for.
Yeah, I don't feel much sorrow for LeBron James. I think that young guy is going to make it.
Yeah, I think he's going to do. Hey, give him all the credit in the world. He's not just for his talent, but a dude that was in the national spotlight at like 14, and he's kept it together. He hasn't fucked up. He's had no freakouts. No flakes, no missteps. His game has never suffered. He's just always kept it going. And he's probably got his affairs or whatever, but he's not fucked it up. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, he's done pretty well, all things considered. Another person we've talked about in the past on this here show who's also doing well is rapper Drake. His latest album, which came out this past year, has now had 1.07 billion streams, which
is, that a lot?
Is a lot.
I don't know how much money. Give me a dollar amount, motherfuckers. It sounds like a lot. A billion people listen to it, but I don't know what that means anymore. It's a YouTube.
Billion's
error.
A lot. I know, billion's a lot.
PewDiePie has 50 million people that watch all the shit he does. And he's
what is he a video game guy? What's he doing?
I think
he's racist or something.
That's just it. He's just some dude where we're like, I'm not really sure what he does, but 50 million fucking people subscribe to him. And I think he's from like Norway or something. Yeah, and I think he plays video games. So I don't know what these numbers mean anymore. I don't understand. I'm an old man. I want to get my cabin and my porch and a dog. So, not you, Sam. I mean, for as long as you can, but you're old. And just sit there and not have to deal with these young kids and their shit.
Yeah, Spotify, he's got a record on Spotify for 10 billion streams total. But I guess that's how people listen to music now, streaming.
And that's just it. Like, you know, he's got the record for 10 billion streams, and his song or whatever does 1 billion. And my brain's just trying to be like, okay, you set the record for something. I feel like when you set a record in this era, that's a... Is that like the equivalent of selling 10 million albums?
I guess.
Yeah. Again, that's really big and impressive, but. I don't know. He's a Canadian. He's a black dude from Canada who was in the Mickey Mouse Club. That's a weird world, man.
Was it Mickey Mouse Club?
It was Degrassi.
Yeah, and Drake and. I don't even know. I'm scrolling through my phone. Do you see that clip of Joanna running the relay torch, the Olympic torch?
I saw a still photo on Twitter, but that's it.
There's a video of her talking to the crowd. I, I was looking for something to dub over, like people honking at her and yelling at her and stuff. And the only thing I could find was From Falling Down. You know the Michael Douglas movie where he, like, you would probably like that movie, where he freaks out and, like, goes into the, yeah, it seems like you in a couple of years. I want to dub. There's a scene where this guy starts, like, screaming at a woman driving, and then Michael Douglas just comes up and sucker punches the guy. But I gotta try and do that because it's stupid.
It's
a great movie. It is pretty good. I like the scene where he can't get breakfast because it's 5 minutes past 11 o'clock or whatever. I would have given him breakfast, but that's just me.
Joel Schumacher directed that, which I only know because, like, I remember looking one time and be like, why do I know Joel Schumacher? Like, why is he, like, a big famous guy? Like, and you go, oh, he directed, like, I think, like, The Rock or and shit like that. But I'm like, oh, he seems like a bigger name than he should be. Maybe that's just because I was at the right age in the 90s. But, again, hell of a movie there. Really, like, that's – that man voted for Donald Trump, let me tell you.
Speaking of Trump, he's always in the news.
He's
been feuding with Sloppy Steve Bannon. Any thoughts on that feud right now?
I mean, look.
Like, here's the thing. Let me back it up for a second.
Yeah, you go
first. I try not to get political on here because, like, I'm just, like, fed up with everyone and everything as far as politics go. It's like, I just wish, like, people could just be normal and realistic and just, like, be reasonable, but, like, neither side is, and it's, like, so irritating.
You're just
going to
say that because your side, but if, no, that's not true. My side is definitely reasonable.
I don't like politics is what I think it gets down to. But anyway, so I try and shy away from it because I know you feel strongly about certain things, but at the same time, like, some of the shit is so funny and so amusing that it's like Bannon was, like, with Trump all along, helped him out a ton on the campaign, was, like, on some, like, National Security Council at one point. Now he's gone, got fired, and is leaving Breitbart, which, like, he ran for years and years. Like, how did his career go to shit so quickly? Like, that story to me is just amazing because he was, like, took a lot of credit for being the guy who got Trump into the White House.
I think part of it is, and I've been kind of looking at this, Trump kind of alluded to this almost today when he said, when they were doing, like, the big old conference negotiations over DACA. And he's sitting in the middle, he goes, like, hey, I'll take the heat. I take the heat. I like taking the heat. That's what I'm good for. I'm good at taking the heat. And, I mean, I actually thought that today's thing with that was the most presidential he's ever looked. I'm like, oh shit, like, that's a dude that people are like, oh yeah, he's a CEO type. But I think when he said that, I have this idea in my head where it's like, real stuff, like, real change actually matters. It's not all just like, oh, we got our tax cuts passed, therefore we win the next election. It's like, no, you win because if you're right, tax cuts mean the economy goes up, more people have money, and they're happier.
Right.
It's substantive. And I think the problem with this Steve Bannon had was he never actually produced something substantive. He was always, like, even within, like, the right-wing movement, he never was respected. When he kind of came to the forefront there, Breitbart, like, Breitbart was a beloved figure on the right. And he was a proud Jewish guy. He was very, like, conservative, but, like, Andrew Breitbart was, like, a lot of people liked him personally, and he died young, and Bannon came and took over the website and drove it in a direction, and guys like Ben Shapiro Ben Shapiro left in early 2016. He's like, I don't like the way this is going. He disrespected a reporter over here. This isn't cool. I don't like, and so he never really was very popular on the right, but for a time you're like, well, he got something done, right? Trump was president. He came in there in a weird period. He's there for 3 or 4 months with Trump before the election. So it seemed kind of like, maybe he's got his thing. But then it turns out he can't deliver. There's nothing substantive there. And it's been found out because Trump got rid of him, and things are better than ever for Trump. And Bannon shot off his mouth, and Trump said, Ah, Sloppy Steve. No one cares, but he's a liar. And he got buried under an avalanche, and suddenly everybody's like, oh yeah, this guy doesn't actually matter. If we call him shit, he can't hurt us. He has no power. And when you don't have real power, like, the illusion was shattered. And I think it's the Mercer family, it's this billionaire family, one of the people that bankroll Breitbart, he fell out of favor with them. It's not a coincidence that, I don't know why he shot off his mouth. I don't know why he said what he said, other than he just misread the situation. You don't have to be a loyal foot soldier, but you probably shouldn't go out there and call the president's son a traitor. Like, come on. Like, seriously, can you ever imagine any of Obama's closest aides or whatever coming out and being like, yeah, that Malia Obama, that fucking cunt betrayed America. Like, even if it was true, like, they would never say it. And so for him to say it, and Trump's just like, all right, you're done. He executes him with like 3 tweets. And now Steve Bannon's just a quirky little footnote in the history of America. And Trump has said, I think I'm going to work with the Democrats on the amnesty, and I'm going to go to Davos and hang out with the big rich people now. New Trump, new year, new me.
The whole thing's mental. It's like every day there's something. It's just... part of me like laughs, like I know you do too, because it like, you know, it's ludicrous, and so do I. Like I like that part of it, but at the same time, it's just like it's tiresome. Like it's, to me, it's getting old. Even though every once in a while I'll see a tweet where I'll just crack up, whether it's about the size of his button or whatever ridiculous thing. Yeah, let the whole stable genius thing. All of that, it's so stupid that I laugh, but at the same time, it's like, part of me just wants somebody who appears more capable. Not even Oprah.
But that personality.
I guess, I don't know. I did not like him before he was president. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Like I didn't like him on The Apprentice. I didn't like him at WrestleMania. He rubbed me the wrong way, and he seemed like a dick. And now that's what we're dealing with. So,
it's so interesting, what it is. Because again, you touched on it. It was like, well, what was it, like 3 or 4 days ago? We were literally asking questions like, is the United States crazy or not? All right. And like, that was dominating the news. And then all of a sudden, all they're talking about is DACA and Trump coming together. It's like he has this ability somehow to manipulate news cycles. And I wonder if this is – I don't pretend that – I'm not somebody that sits there and goes, everything Trump does is planned out. I don't think it is. I don't think everything's completely ludicrous. But there's somewhere in the middle. But I kind of wonder if this is, again, just a sea change like we've seen in MMA – with these younger guys coming up there at 170 and getting rid of the old guys. Whereas FDR was a dominant force because he embraced the radio. He never would have won without the radio. And he never would have won in the era of television. And JFK never would have won anywhere but in an era of television. Right. And, you know, Bill Clinton with the internet kind of, it was hip and new, it kind of worked with him. Trump truly is a social media person. All, you know, we consume our media so fast. You look at Twitter and entire stories, people's lives are destroyed and made in an afternoon on Twitter.
Except for Trump.
Because he keeps up with this pace of everything. Everybody else has one moment in their life where they're like, oh shit, I wasn't prepared for this avalanche of 12,000 tweets in a half an hour. I can't handle this. Everybody's calling me a racist. I'm sorry. And then they hide away. Whereas Trump's just like, yeah, fuck you. I love black people. Look at my Mexican taco bowl. I'm a fucking hero to everybody here. And then, so everybody's calling him a giant racist. And then out of nowhere, he's like, actually, I think we can do DACA without a wall. Let's just get this taken care of. And we'll deal with somebody else who's like, wait, what? Like, the one thing he was known as, the one big, gigantic criticism of Trump is he's a racist, and the reason was he wants to build this wall. This wall was a symbolic racism thing, and the first time he addresses it as president, he's like, yeah, no, I can work with you a little bit here. Let's go. It's like, holy shit. What's going on? This is crazy, man. I love it. I keep in mind, I'm a man without a future. This probably makes it a lot easier for me to love it. But hell, all I look is I go, well, shit's working. People are like, don't say that about North Korea. Don't say that about North Korea. For the first time in 2 years, North Korea is meeting with South Korea to discuss things. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Did that really work? You just had to brag about the size of your fucking button? And all of a sudden he's like, Kim Jong-un's like, okay, I'll talk with that guy over there. Yeah, it's just, I'm so wrong-ry. I'm sorry.
2 years isn't that long of a time, though. Like, I didn't really understand that. Like, granted, they're neighbors, and they should obviously talk more often, but they're acting like it's been, like, a 20 years of silence, but...
No, but he still got it done.
2 years ago, you know, I guess.
In a weird way, like, look at this way. Everybody said...
But was that meeting planned before his tweets? Like, I don't know that Trump got that done.
No, he 100% gets the credit because he would have got 100% of the blame if something went wrong. You know, he... Clearly, yeah. The way that America.
See, I don't think it's that simple though. It's like him taking credit for there being no commercial airline crashes in 2017 because of his strict regulations. Like, what the fuck? Like, kidding?
But again, if North Korea shot a nuclear weapon at America, people would have gone, yes. Trump goaded them into it. And so okay. I think it's fair to say if you get the blame for the wrong, get the credit for the right.
I wouldn't blame him for that, because I think North Korea is crazy and they've been a problem for a long time, and if they're going to send a nuke, I don't think they're going to send it because of a Trump tweet. I think they're just going to send it because they're nuts.
That's why
I don't think a tweet is going to provoke someone to nuke another country. I don't buy that. But that's just me. I don't think that's how the world works.
Neither do I, but yeah. Again, when you're captain of this boat, if you get lucky when you catch a big group of guppies or whatever you eat, flounder, you get the credit. That's just how it works. You get the blame, you get the credit, and Trump's doing it. And if his stuff works, I've said it so many times, I can't deny reality. If I don't know why something is working, but it's working, eventually I just have to go, I don't fucking hey, man, Trump's making it happen. I don't understand why. None of this makes any sense to me. You really should not be able to brag about grabbing pussy a month before an election and still get elected. But damn if it ain't happened, so I guess he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I thought that was the end too. I think people, I don't know. I think there's enough people who are fed up with, you know, your typical politicians. And even though he's saying fucked up shit and doing fucked up shit, people like him because he seems like he's shooting from the hip and he's real. I don't know if that's an accurate portrayal of Trump, but I think there's enough people that believe that got him those swing states and got him into office.
Oh, I 100% believe it. And I've said it before that, like 2014, if you're walking down the street and you saw Donald Trump, and hey, Donald Trump, you raise your hand for a high five, he would give you a high five. Obama might also, but the difference is Obama would do it and then move on with his life. It would not register with him. Whereas with Trump, both of you would have gotten something out of that interaction. Trump would have been like, yeah, I'm a fucking badass. Look at that. I just walked down the street. People fucking love me. I'm awesome. Like, and he would have been into it, and people know it. It's like,
Obama, I bet you would get a fist bump from Obama.
Maybe, but nothing Obama did was real. Like, he was not a real person. He was all teleprompter. Like, every other politician, I don't fault him. Like, I'm sure he has stuff. Whereas with Trump, there ain't no fucking hiding it. This man just grabs his phone and is like, by the way, remember when I announced that I'm gonna do an awards show for the fake news media? I'm postponing it 2 days because it's so exciting. He doesn't just let it go. He's like, he's thought about it for days on end. He's like, all right, I got to do the fake news ceremony. Oh, Monday's not a good day. I'll move to Wednesday. I have more time to prepare for that. And as dumb as it is, I think people are just like, you know, I kind of get it. If I was president, I'd want to sell some scores. And they clearly, like, CNN clearly is not a fan of President Trump. Maybe they're right. Maybe he's maybe he's the bad guy. But if you're the bad guy, you don't like the good guys. So I get it. It's used whenever you can to shoot the good guys down. Maybe you want to be on the good guy's side, so be it. But everyone's a hero of their own story, especially Donald Trump.
Did you see Jake Tapper and Stephen Miller?
Yes, I did.
So good.
That was fucking weird. I saw this. So,
Stephen Miller's a weird fucking human being.
31 years old or something.
Yeah.
He's super
just
young.
His mannerisms and tone, like, I
don't
say
Rory
McDonald-ish, but I see him like, I don't
looks
know.
Looks like a dude on Quaaludes.
It's just, or he does weird stuff to his, like, animals.
Yeah, when I saw him on TV, I'm like, first of all, how are you this bad? Like your job. I see this a lot with the talking heads, and it's my own ego, I'm sure, involved, but I'm like, how are you I could do a much better job of this right now without any prep. Why do you suck at this so much? Your job is literally to talk to the press. That's what you do. And he's shit at it. I think Jake Tapper, I thought he was fine. You know,
he got a little worked up. Like, it's like, chill out.
And I thought Tapper maybe could have pulled it back a little bit. But I think if you're a right-wing guy and you go on CNN, the way that Tapper was approaching it, the questions were fair enough that you can't be like, this was a Rachel Maddow hit piece type of thing. Like, and, you know, Miller kept saying, like, give me time to talk. And, like, he had a lot of time to talk. To me, that's a sign that the host is fair. It doesn't matter what the question is. If they give you, like, 2 minutes uninterrupted, you get to say what you want to say. And he just kept hitting the same weird talk. It was just the most blatant use of talking points. Which, again, they all have talking points, but how are you so bad at incorporating them?
Yeah.
I know you want to hit your buzzwords, but you look so stupid in these. Everybody looks stupid. They all look stupid. When the host asks you a question, and you obviously can just answer it and then pivot away, like, you don't have to be like, so today the president said the sky is red. Why do you think that is? Don't go into some giant dissertation about, like, look, when the way the aurora borealis hit the light and this, just be like, look, that was a misspeak. He misspoke. Here's what he really meant. You've addressed it. You move on. It's great. It says Stephen Miller's arguing these weird points, and then Tapper nails him to the wall like Jesus on a Saturday night and just annihilates him with the, well, I guess you're having an audience, like you're playing to your audience of one. And when he said that, that was a moment of brilliance, because I go, oh, shit, he's completely right. Everything Miller's saying right now makes a lot more sense now. He's saying this for one person. And it destroyed Miller. It made Trump look dumb. It made Tapper look like a genius. I don't know why you're so bad at this. How is Trump the same guy that does this brilliant PR move where he has the most powerful people in the world all sitting at a table, and he's the center of attention, and he's above it all, and he's bringing left and right together, and I'm like, holy shit, this is brilliant. This is the best political theater in the world. These people have been worked, and they don't even realize it. Durbin, Feinstein, all of them have just put themselves in a subservient position to him. He looks great. And a day earlier, he was having a surrogate go out there and be like, look, Jake, I know you asked me about Russia, but the president is really smart. You know, he went to that Wharton School of Business, and he's got a very large brain. Somebody measured his brain 13% larger than the average brain. This man knows what he's doing. What the fuck is going on?
I liked when he was talking about how he's ridden in planes with the president, and he just kept repeating that over and that he's a genius. It was just like, it was so painful because
He had an anecdote.
I couldn't deal with it.
Like, it was a good anecdote for the one time. Be like, hey, I've been with the president on an airplane the one time. He just off the cuff asked questions for an hour. He's really smart and engaged. Like, oh, okay. But then the next question comes along, and your response is,
same thing.
So I've been in an airplane with the president once, and we engaged for an hour off the cuff. It's like, wait, you only have one piece of evidence for this, don't you? That's really weird. And there was somebody else on, I think Fox or somebody, and it might have been the Mooch, actually, who I missed the Mooch so much. They're talking about how, like, yeah, I've been with the president, and he throws a football, and he threw, like, a perfect spiral, and I watched him play basketball once, and he, like, shot free throws, and, like, great shot. I'm like, are you serious?
It sounds like Kim Jong-un, like, or the other one, like, he golfed once in his life and got 18 holes in one and never golfed again.
It was just bizarre because, yes, Trump is very thin-skinned like that, but he's also, like, again, he's done pro wrestling. He took the stunner. You know, like, he did put himself in a quote-unquote vulnerable position. So these people saying this stuff, I don't know, maybe it's one of those, like, deals where they'll look back and they, when they look at, like, the POW and they go, oh, look at that. He was blinking in Morse code. Maybe these guys are all just, like, saying shit in Morse code and they're all being held captive and they need help.
Do you think, like, after Trump's out of office, like, a lot of these guys will get hired by Trump?
Happens, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Miller's only 31 or whatever. He can get some executive job in Trump's corporation or whatever when this is over. And you kiss his ass for 4 years and then he decides he doesn't want to run again or he loses in the next election or whatever. And you've got a job for life working for a billionaire, an easy, cushy, seven-figure job. No?
No, because...
Because that would be my play if I was Stephen Miller.
Thing is, though,
just hang in here these 4 years.
But once you're in, like, the position where he's at, where you're in a White House situation, you're always going to be making big money for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You're always going to go someplace. And Trump is, like, 70-some-odd years old. He's not going to be around forever. And I can't imagine that Jared and Ivanka are going to be like, oh, you're one of those guys that was really loyal to my dad? Well, guess what? I hated my father. He was a pervert. You're fired.
Maybe. Speaking of getting old, Betty White recently turned 95. Do you know what she claims her secret to being living this long is?
If you say sex, I'm going to puke.
No.
Thank goodness. Whiskey and cigarettes?
Better. Closer. She says vodka and hot dogs, which is good for you. You love a wiener.
Those are like my two favorite food groups. If somebody said, Mike, you have to sit on this deserted island, beautiful beach, but we're going to torture you and all you can have is vodka and hot dogs. I'd be like, holy shit, dude, you nailed it. This is awesome. I love hot dogs. My brother had you know that there are toasters for hot dogs?
Yeah, I've seen them.
Yeah, my brother had one. It was awesome. Like, you could do two hot dogs at the same time and two buns. I remember when I saw it, I kind of laughed at him. And then when I'm at his place, pre-wedding, and I'm wandering around just stoned out of my mind, and I'm like, oh, I want a hot dog. And I made two hot dogs, and I ate them. I go, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life. I get a hot dog so quick. It's way better than like a microwave and a hot dog or some shit. It was glorious.
Yeah, I haven't had a hot dog in 30-something years.
What is wrong with you?
I had a hot dog when I was 5 and I puked and I never went back. I'm not a fan of their shape or whatever they're made of. Like, I don't like the texture. I don't like the feel of them. Like, I'll cook them at, like, cookouts and stuff when people come over or whatever. But I don't know. They gross me out. They give me the heebie-jeebies. They'll eat all sorts of weird shit.
So when you hear about, like, me going to 7-Eleven to get hot dogs for lunch, you're sitting there going, oh, my gosh.
No, I mean, you say and do way more ridiculous things than that, so that doesn't really faze me.
Like, I love gas station hot dogs.
Well, I mean, I've seen those, and I know people buy them. They wouldn't be out if no one bought them. It's just not my cup of tea. I don't buy chewing tobacco either. There's a lot of things at convenience stores I don't buy. But whatever. Hot dogs aren't my thing. But Betty White likes to munch on them.
That is awkward.
I guess. Did you hear about the United passenger who smeared feces in the plane's bathrooms getting the flight grounded?
No idea what you're talking about. I wasn't involved.
A United Airlines flight was forced to make an unscheduled stop in Alaska on Thursday night, and it's all because of one crappy passenger. United Flight 895 was en route from Chicago to Hong Kong when a male passenger began smearing feces across two of the aircraft's lavatories and then tried to flush his own shirt down one of the toilets.
Maybe he's dyslexic.
Trying to get the joke.
Because he put the poop on the chair and the shirt in the toilet.
Okay.
In my world, dyslexics mix up everything.
The plane was forced to divert to Anchorage, and the flight to Hong Kong was ultimately canceled due to operational difficulties in the plane. Airport police said the man cooperated with the flight crew following the incident, was also cooperative with FBI officials who questioned him upon landing. The man was transported to a Providence hospital for evaluation. He was not arrested.
I'm glad that, like, he was cooperative. You know, usually, usually people that smear feces on, you know, anything tend not to be cooperative afterwards. Nobody's ever, like, you know, shat in their hand, wiped on the wall, and been like, oh yeah, you got some questions for me? Sure, I'll sit down and ask you what you're going on. Usually it's like, and they throw the shit at you.
Yeah, that's how I kind of pictured it too. It was just struck me as odd as there were no, like, charges filed against this guy who forced this plane to have to land and screw everyone's life up. And it just seems like forcing a plane to land because you're smearing shit on the wall, it seems like it could be criminal.
That's got to be against the rules. Like, you can't, I can't imagine you're allowed to shit on your hands and wipe it on chairs in public, let alone on a flying metal tube over the Pacific Ocean. Like, that seems like it's not cool, but maybe it's one of those things where somebody's like, well, we never really thought it would happen, so it's not against the rules. Oops.
Or how about being the guy who cleans the plane? Like, you get in there, you start vacuuming the aisles or something. Then you get to the back of the plane in the bathroom. You're like, what the fuck? What? I've never seen this. I've been cleaning planes for 20 years. I've never seen shit smeared. Was there turbulence? What happened to
actually,
you?
Actually, I feel comfortable saying that the people that clean the planes for 20 years have seen shit on seats before.
This wasn't on seats. He, like, went from one bathroom to another and smeared his poop everywhere.
I actually believe that they've probably seen a bathroom or two that have essentially been annihilated. People are monsters, especially in bathrooms. You just know somebody shat in a toilet, didn't flush it, there's some turbulence, and somebody opened the door and they went, sweet mother of Lord.
While we're on the topic of airplanes, India's Jet Airways has fired two of its pilots after they reportedly fought inside the cockpit and at times abandoned their post on a New Year's Day flight. A spokesperson for the airline told the ABC News in a statement that after reviewing reported events, Jet Airways has terminated services of both the cockpit crew with immediate effect. The spokesperson didn't give any additional details, but last week, it was reported in Times of India that a male pilot allegedly slapped a female co-pilot in the cockpit mid-flight, after which she left the cockpit in tears. The news outlet said the male pilot twice left the flight unmanned when he came out to persuade her to return to the controls.
I like that two pilots had a fight, and the words "at times" were used, which implies that this fight went on for a prolonged period of time where you could divide it up into different eras. Like, well, at one point they were fighting here, and at one point they were fighting there. At some times they were doing this. Like, how long are two guys allowed to fight in an airplane when they're around the controls? I feel like you should get like one or two punches and somebody goes, hey, there's a fight up here, and the crew separates them.
I like it better that it was a man and a woman.
Well,
like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Can you not slap this lady you're flying this plane with for until we land, at least, please?
Or you can't, sir? You can't, you know, look. It's part of this pussification of American culture. I know it's India, but go with it. Men just can't, they don't know how to keep a bitch in line. That's the problem. He should have just grabbed her, slapped her, kissed her, fucked her, and told her, you're welcome. Flew that motherfucker right into Mumbai.
Yeah, I'd rather have him just pay attention to the controls.
A man that just fucked a bitch is a good pilot.
Really?
I learned that from Top Gun.
I haven't seen Top Gun in a long time.
I'm pretty sure that was the moral of the story.
Was it?
Yeah.
Huh. Goose dies, right?
Maverick was
spoiler alert. Hope we didn't ruin Top Gun for anyone. Anything else going on in the world?
No, I just want to let that go silent.
Well, it worked. You did it. I think that's all I've got for MMA and stuff this week.
Perfect.
So I will bid adieu here. Thank you for listening to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. We should be back next week. Talk to you later. Bye.
Get up, cocksuckers. It's all over. Listen, we had a rough couple of months. Fucking Katrina's cousin Maria, the other one, Puerto Rico, Houston, fucking Florida. Listen, it's been tough up to now. The earthquake in Mexico, you know, the White House, whoever the fuck is going on. But it don't matter. They want to shoot, it's time for us to fucking shoot, cocksuckers. They want to get down and dirty, don't forget who the fuck we are, you understand me? We're the baddest motherfuckers out there. You send a message to that fucking North Korean, he's going to be sniffing my dick and sucking my asshole. That's the focus. We're going to North Korea in like a year. It's going to be an island. It's going to glow in the dark. You know why? Because we're Americans, cocksuckers. Who the fuck do you think you're dealing with? Stop with the gun control. They're selling more guns than ever the last 3 days. Stop with the fucking whining. Stop with the Russians on Facebook. I don't give a fuck. Worry about yourself. Keep your eyes open. And get the fuck off Snapchat and fucking Twitter, cocksucker. Stay black.